Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I bring you precious contraband and ancient tales.
Oh. Right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Wednesday. That means Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, Wild Card Wednesday, yeah. Any artist, any song, anything, we'll play them later. Get them in now at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Coming up this morning, our good friend Ian Scherer is going to join us. He is from CNET.com. He's an editor at large, and we talk to him about once a month with all kinds of tech talk. So we've got some big tech stories to talk about, and we'll talk with Ian about that. You can check him out at CNET.com. So there you go. Also coming up a little bit later on, there are some crazy and insane movie sequels that you didn't even know existed. Sequels to movies, you go, what? Wait a minute. They did a sequel to what? So there's a bunch of them. So we're going to talk unnecessary and crazy movie sequels that nobody has really heard about. Speaking of movies, we're going to talk about the movie ratings controversy, the dumbest film ratings controversy in movie history. We'll get to that. And we are also going to talk about some ridiculous flavors of pop slash soda from around the world. And there are some ridiculous flavors out there. People like to experiment with weird flavors. So that's all coming up on the show. You can contact us, talk or tech, and get your wild card Wednesday requests in. And it's 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Nick D Show. facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. Let me say hello to my my producer, Tom Hushed. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick.
Hey, there's some crazy stuff going on tech-wise here at the station. I think we broke the radio station.
Well, it was bound to happen eventually.
The internet has been going down, coming back up, and going down, coming back up. And we kind of need the internet. You know, it's a very helpful tool to do the show.
Yeah.
We also, you know, won't be able to take requests if the internet is down. It's up now. Everything is good now. But at one point during the news, the whole thing stopped.
Yeah.
Like there was nothing. So it could be an interesting morning.
Yeah. More interesting than usual.
Yeah. So I don't know what's going on. Is it full moon? Something going on? Is there
There's
gremlins. You know what? Dick Miller knows it. Dick Miller knows it's gremlins.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's gremlins. That's what it is. I love the fact that they brought him back for the sequel, even though they killed him in the first one.
Well, you know,
you got to bring Dick Miller back.
You can't not have Dick Miller in the sequel. Plus, they got the spider gremlin.
Yeah.
Electric gremlin.
It's one of the funniest Key and Peele. And did you see Joe Dante's response to that?
You know, I didn't.
Oh, Joe Dante responded to it. He posted it up on Trailers from Hell, and he posted it up, and he said he posted the clip and said, "Yep, this is exactly how the meeting went."
That's the boardroom.
Yep. And I actually like the sequel more than the first one, and I love the first one, but the second one is just certifiably nuts.
Yeah, which is better for a sequel to a movie like Gremlins.
Yeah.
Because where do you go from Gremlins?
Well, the thing is, Gremlins was, you know, it was a Dante movie, but the second one was a Dante movie.
Yeah.
Like, it was live-action Looney Tunes. You know, I mean, when it opens up with the Looney Tunes logo,
mm-hmm.
right there, I love that movie. So anyway, maybe there's some gremlins around. We'll figure it out. But we're here. We're here till 5 a.m. And we got lots of fun stuff to talk about. Tom, you're all excited because Thursday, you got your tickets for Thursday's 70mm screening at 4 o'clock at the Music Box of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yes, I've been waiting quite a while for this since, what, 2015 was the Hateful Eight?
2015, December of 2015. I saw Hateful Eight the day after Christmas.
Yeah.
At like 11 a.m. at the Music Box in 70. So that was the last time a movie came out that Tarantino directed. Now, here's the thing. You know, he talks about how he's only going to do 10 movies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 10 movies, that's it, he's done. There's rumors that he's going to do a Kill Bill Volume 3.
Yeah, he said that he's talking to Uma.
All right, so does that mean then that he's got two more movies to do?
I think it's just going to be a Volume 3. I think it's going to
But he counts Volume 1 and 2 as one film.
That's true.
He counts, so does that mean that he's weaseling in? He's going to do 11 movies and actually they will count as 10?
You know, it's weird. I just had this discussion with my girlfriend today who I'm taking to go see, going to see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And she's also a Tarantino fan. I was the one who introduced her. I was just like, here, you got to watch all this. But, you know, what constitutes 10 is it 10 that he's directed, or just what makes his oeuvre, you know?
Well, this is what he counts. This is how he counts them. He counts Kill Bill 1 and 2 as one film. So it's Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, Jackie Brown, both Kill Bills, Inglourious Bastards, Django Unchained. What am I missing here? Oh, Death Proof. Death Proof, Django Unchained, and Hateful Eight.
Right.
So if he makes another Kill Bill movie, he'll just pile that in with the other two and call it one movie. So then that way he can make another film, and that'll be his 10th.
Yeah, I could see that. Because he's still talking about this Star Trek movie that he's supposed to do, an R-rated Star Trek, which should be interesting.
Yeah.
But, you know, you also have to think about him as a... Because he said that after he's done directing, he still wants to write.
Yeah.
He still wants to be involved.
Yeah.
And you know, he's written stuff that he didn't direct, like From Dusk Till Dawn, he did the story. True Romance, he did the screenplay.
Natural Born Killers.
Your absolute favorite.
Which is the worst movie ever made.
So it's weird to think about there's Tarantino as a director and then Tarantino just as a filmmaker at large. And he's not going to go away. This is his life's work.
Well, no, of course he's not going to go away because he enjoys the spotlight too much.
That's... You know, I get a lot of flack sometimes for how much I enjoy him, and I do have to cop to the fact that him as a public person is grating at times.
Oh, he makes me nuts. He makes me nuts. Even on Kimmel, I watched Kimmel yesterday morning, then he was on the night before, but made me nuts.
I know.
I don't know. So, but I really hope this movie is good, and I've been hearing a lot of good things, and one of the things is that I know that, I mean, I just, here's the thing. I know that he's, you know, now he's like rewriting history in his movies.
Mm-hmm.
If he like has Brad Pitt kill Charles Manson, I may kill him. You know what I mean? Like if he pulls some kind of stunt like that, I'll be like, come on, man.
I mean, we are talking about the guy that killed Hitler on screen.
Well, yeah. And then he tells that story. He told that story on Kimmel.
Yeah.
The other morning or the other night. But anyway, I'm looking forward to it. I just, you know, I always try to adjust my expectations when it comes to... when it comes to Tarantino, but I'm looking forward. I actually have a really good feeling about this, mainly because it's like a love letter to the Hollywood that he loves, and he's got like those two. That cast is unbelievable. Let's go into the newsroom. There's been some crazy stuff going on in there too. Vic, are you there?
Yep.
Oh, I can hear you.
Yeah. I from the word from Adam, our engineer, the issue is things are working now. We're not sure whether it's completely repaired or not because the issue is kind of unsure what caused it, but we're working now.
Okay. Well, it could be an adventurous morning, Vic. So, yeah. All right. Well, luckily we have Adam Phillips here, who is one of the best engineers, in the business. And he's on point. He's here. So if we have any technical difficulties, we happen to have one of the greatest engineers ever, working here. So we're positive. We feel good about that, right, Vic?
Yeah, absolutely. He's reset everything in here and it seems to be operating like a new car. So we'll see.
All right. Well, why don't we take a break and see if we can come back and not break the radio station? I really don't want to be responsible for breaking the radio station. This, you know, this radio station's got a pretty good history. I don't want to break it. So we'll see what's happening. It's Wednesday morning. Wildcard Wednesday fits in. 312-981-7200. We're going to break. And when we come back, Ian Schur from CNET.com. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Wednesday, Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in now. That's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Coming up, we're going to talk about movie sequels that you had no idea ever existed. And speaking of movies, we got some movie ratings controversies that we're going to talk about, and some pretty ridiculous flavors of soda from around the world, which, you know, people have very strange taste. But right now, we want to jump into talking about some stuff from CNET. Ian Schur is the editor-at-large at CNET, and we want to talk about some of the stuff that's happening online in the world. And let's talk to Ian Schur. Ian, welcome back.
Hi, how you doing? I don't have any tang for you, sorry.
So you don't?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, tell everybody about yourself, Ian.
Well, you know, we are the world's largest tech news site. We do, we're one of the oldest review sites out there. And I specifically write about the wonderful world of social networking and what my friends jokingly call the downfall of democracy, and how all this stuff is impacting our lives. Because one of the things I think we all have started to notice is that whether we like it or not, the tech industry has huge impacts on our daily lives, and it's important to understand what's going on.
Yeah, and it is a huge part. You know, as much as people, you know, Ian, being in the business that you're in, you know, people, you know. Have opinions about you know using the internet and using social media, but everybody uses it. You fall into it, and you know it's part of your life.
It is, and what's interesting is that there's so many different types, right? There's YouTube, which is one of the most trafficked websites on the planet. There's studies out there and data that's indicating that it is used by teenagers and young people more than Google to look stuff up.
Is that right?
You know, right? Like, you've got Facebook, obviously. Instagram is huge. You know, it's incredible how pervasive this stuff is, to the point that, you know, not only has it upended our politics, but it's upended policy, right? One of the most fascinating things I've been seeing is this research that's going on about not only the Russian interference in our elections, but how they actually encourage online debate and both sides of it, so that it becomes such a big deal online that reporters end up covering it because it's got so much noise. And one of the questions that researchers ask is, well, if the Russians hadn't been encouraging both sides of it to make us feel more divided, would we have even ever actually debated it? And that's a really interesting issue.
Yeah, it really is. And it's, you know, it's become, you know, we have a president who tweets all the time now. And so it's, the social media has become a massive part, not only because of the Russian interference in the election and all the other things, but we now have a guy who's in office who, instead of making speeches or instead of taking meetings, he just tweets it all out. And now, obviously, Twitter is a major part of politics.
Well, I think what's interesting is that it's not, you know, he's an example of, you know, one of the people who uses it to an extreme degree. But I have to say that you look at people like AOC and Elizabeth Warren, who's running for president, and a bunch of these other people, you're seeing social media become a central part of all of their campaigns, because it is a much more effective way these days to get in touch with people, particularly young people. And I think that's really fascinating. And even to the point where there's actually more research being done about the boomer generation and how they respond to social media as well. So it's not even young people anymore. It's everybody.
Yeah, absolutely true. All right, well, let's get into some tech talk. Okay, Ian, here we go. You know, since we're talking about social media, let's talk about the Facebook. There's some mishandled phone numbers, some facial recognition problems. What's going on with Facebook? And they're always in the news with stuff like this.
They are. So, I mean, as early as tomorrow, we're going to see a settlement for $5 billion with the FTC over this Cambridge Analytica scandal, which you may remember.
Yeah.
Tied right back to President Trump, this political consultancy that bought, in a very bad way, they bought tens of millions of people's Facebook profile information and then used that inappropriately to target political ads. And that became a huge scandal. Facebook found out about it years ago, but tried to kind of cover it up. It became a huge scandal. And so now we're seeing a $5 billion settlement, or it's not settlement, a fine from the FTC around that. There's also a second thing that's going to be announced, possibly, which is a new kind of settlement that the FTC will have found with Facebook around how they handled our phone numbers. So one of the things that they encouraged us to do a long time ago, Facebook encouraged us, was to set up our phones for what's called dual-factor authentication. You may have done this, where they ask you to log in, and then they send a password to your phone number, right? And this is a really good system. It makes sure that your phone, your Facebook account won't get hacked and all this type of stuff.
Right.
But apparently they were using this for advertisers, too. Oh. And advertisers could actually use that information to target ads at you, which, of course, is a forehead slap if you ever saw one. So they're going to get in trouble for that. And then there's all this other stuff. It just feels like, you know, almost everything Facebook does these days somehow runs afoul of our government. And it's really just crazy to watch.
Yeah. It seems like Facebook is in the news every week for something, something not good every week.
I spoke to one researcher, I think, who really put it right. They said, you know, there is a lot of unexploded ordnance around Facebook. There's a lot of bad behavior that they've been doing for years that's starting to catch up with them.
Yeah.
And, the other thing is that they don't think this is over. You know, I think that we're starting to see increasing efforts from the government to come down on a bunch of tech companies after years of letting them basically do whatever they want.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to see even Congress at one point might actually get its act together. I would be shocked, too, but they might actually get their act together and decide to do something, too, which will be its own mess. So it's going to be really fascinating.
I'm wondering if Mark Zuckerberg is going to have to leave and go back to his home planet. At some point.
I thought he was a robot, or he's supposed to be a lizard.
He's something. I don't know.
There's so many rumors.
I do want to talk quickly about this. You know how there are obviously social media and internet fads that last about 2 weeks. This face app thing. Which was the hot thing that everybody was doing. And then, of course, everybody discovered that it was like, oh, we can take your identity and we're going to scan you, you know, and it's the Russians made this app and all this other stuff. What was the talk at CNET about Face App?
Well, you know, a couple of us, including myself, actually made the older face thing.
A ton of people did it. I know a ton of my friends and people did it. I didn't do it, but a lot of people did.
Yeah, my favorite one was when someone did it on Twitter. There were a lot of smart ones. My favorite one was they showed the Avengers, right? So you had Thor and you had Iron Man, and they did it for the Hulk, right? And then they did it for Paul Rudd, and he looked exactly the same as now.
Right.
That guy just doesn't old age.
Right.
But you know, the thing is that the biggest concern about the app, there were two things. One was that it was built by a Russian developer, and anytime you deal with someone who is in another country like Russia or China, there's a question about whether the security apparatus or the propaganda apparatus is a part of it. And that's a legitimate conversation. You know, I don't know whether it was true in this case, but it should always be something we think about, sadly. Mm. The other thing is that the app by default would ask for access to all of your photos on your phone. And this was a really scary thing. And a lot of people just push yes all the time.
Oh, man,
because
yeah.
They're just used to that. And by doing that, it's possible, it wasn't in this case, but it was possible they could take all of your photos and take them into their systems. And then they say, by the terms of service, which is very normal for a lot of apps, that whatever they have in their systems, they're allowed to use in perpetuity without any worry about licensing or anything else. So there was a possibility if they sucked up all your photos, they could use them for advertising or whatever else. Now, they didn't, and this app was, it seems like, by all accounts, was actually not a bad actor, but it caused this huge concern, and it was a good reminder. I said this to a lot of people. I'm really happy people are having these conversations now and not after some disaster where everyone did it and then learned that all their information was gone. Like, this is the right thing to do, is to be worried, and I know it sounds ridiculous to say it, but you really have to be looking out for yourself. And we've been saying this at CNET for years, and I'm really happy people are actually starting to realize it.
Yeah, it was. I mean, everybody, you know, like I said, for about a 3-day period, all of my friends looked like they were 95 years old on my Facebook.
Except Paul Rudd.
Yes, Paul Rudd, who never ages. Yeah, Paul Rudd looks exactly like he did in Clueless. I don't know how he does it. But you know, when the story then became it was designed by Russians, they could take your pictures, they could do that. Again, there's always, doesn't it seem, Ian, that there's always like, oh, we're having some fun with social media, and we're having some fun with the internet, and there's always something that's going to backslide and be bad. There's always a bad side.
The reality is that we cannot have fun anymore. I mean, this is it. You know, 2019, it's over. I'm declaring it now. There is no more fun on the internet. It just doesn't happen.
All right. Well, look, Ian, hang on, okay? All right. Our good friend Ian Scherer is with us. He is with CNET.com, an editor at large, and we're doing some more tech talk. Check him out on Twitter at Ian Scherer. That's I-A-N-S-H-E-R-R. Ian Scherer from CNET. More tech talk right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Wednesday. That means Wild Card Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything, get your requests in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about sequels that you didn't even know existed. Insane movie sequels. Where did they come from? We got some movie rating controversy, and we're also going to talk about some ridiculous flavors for pop and soda across the world. But right now we're having some tech talk. Ian Scherer is an editor-at-large with CNET.com. Check out CNET.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Ian Scherer. And we got more tech talk to talk about. And here is Ian. Ian, welcome back.
Hi. By the way, Return to Oz is the weirdest sequel I ever saw.
I love that movie. I love Return to Oz. It's Fairuza Balk's first movie too. She played Dorothy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Stuff I didn't know.
She played Dorothy.
It's definitely a weird movie.
It is a very
sure. I think
no.
We
there's,
can all agree on that.
There's no question about it. It's a very strange movie. Any Oz movie that opens with Dorothy getting shock treatment is weird. And that's how that movie opens. So
yes, no, I do like the. I mean, it's very like, you know, so the Cold War of them, right? Like,
yeah,
very cynical. Like, oh, you know, she wakes up, she tells everyone, "You were there, you were there,
yeah.
you were there," and then the next minute they're like, "Okay, into an insane asylum."
Yeah, exactly right. All right, let's get back to some tech talk here, Ian. The Equifax breach that we all knew about back in 2017. How can people claim their share of the dough? What's going on?
Yeah, so there's a $700 million settlement. And so if you are one of the 147 million people who were affected, you can actually have a claim. And what they're doing, we have instructions on CNET. It's not going to be finalized yet, so you can't make a claim yet, but you can sign up for an email to let you know when you can, is that they are going to have to figure this out with a judge, get approval, and then what you'll be able to do is get a repayment of up to $20,000 for expenses related to unauthorized charges on your accounts, or cost of freezing your credit, or cost of credit monitoring, even stuff like postage and notary and all sorts of other stuff, although that's a lot of notaries for $20,000. It's only 15 bucks in my local UPS. But, you know, the thing is that they're going to have to pay out for everyone's just frustrated lost time. And I think that's really good. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how the judge feels about this. But typically when we get these kind of settlements, most of the money doesn't go anywhere. It goes to the lawyers who brought the class action. And then the rest of it kind of $25 a piece for the people affected. And here, we're starting to actually see money go to the people affected that'll help pay for, like, attorneys and accountants. And some people's lives are turned upside down, and I'm glad to see that Equifax is going to have to pay that.
Wow. And, boy, that's going to be a big dent to Equifax right there, man.
It will. But, you know, I think a lot of people, after seeing how this is one of those examples where the company did everything wrong. There's no defending them
yeah.
in this situation. And when it comes to that, I think that the punishment needs to fit the crime, right?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people feel good to see that they're getting punished. And I think there's a fair number of people who would say that it's probably not enough. And I would be really curious to see how that debate forms as the judge is deciding whether or not to accept the settlement.
Yeah. And in the piece that's on CNET.com right now, there are a step-by-step thing about how to prepare your claim and then what will settlement payments are going to cover and things like that. Like, you guys go into detail and step-by-step stuff to help people out.
Yeah, and the most important thing is we have a link to the FTC's email update system so that if you think you have a claim, you can sign up now and get notified when the judge, if the judge approves the settlement.
Yeah, and there's also, you provide a phone number that you can call for you, where you can get updates as well if you want to go that way. And that's 833-759-2982, 833-759-2982 if you think you've been affected by the Equifax breach. So there you go. Another big story in the news here. All right. So let's talk about this. How is this possible? Ian, you wrote this piece on CNET. How is it possible that one in three Americans think they have 5G?
Well, I think what's really crazy is that almost none of them have it.
Yeah.
And they all think they do.
Yeah.
And I'm blown away by that. I mean, this is why I wrote the piece. I just could not believe it. So, you know, part of what's going on here is that this is the impact of advertising, right? So, you know, what happened was that Declutter, which, by the way, is a company that will refurbish phones and sell them again, surveyed 2,000 U.S. smartphone owners in May. So this is before most of the 5G networks were even turning on for testing. And they found that about a third of people who responded believed they had a device capable of 5G connections. And here's my favorite part of the data. 40% of the people who said they think they have a 5G device were iPhone owners. Apple has not yet released a 5G iPhone. And so it's unbelievable. And a lot of this is because if you have an AT&T phone right now, like I do, and you look at the phone, you're going to see in the top right this thing that says 5GE. And believe it or not, that's not 5G. It's actually 4G with a little extra added to it. AT&T is selling that as 5G. They've been sued over it. They actually came to a settlement with Sprint over it because Sprint said that they were basically lying. And they came to some sort of a settlement, but that settlement did not include taking the 5GE off my phone. And so everyone is criticizing AT&T less than life because it's caused all of this confusion.
Yeah. Wow. How much?
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, Ian, when you're doing this, how much do you think Americans should get to know about their technology? Should they be more educated?
You know,
do you think people should be more educated about what they have?
Well, I mean, as someone who loves to be the guy who teaches everyone everything, obviously I love when people learn more, right?
Yeah.
But also, this needs to be fair game, right? Like, part of my job is to explain things to people. And, you know, when you're the world's largest tech news site, your job is you have to be able to talk to normal people. And I think part of the problem here is that AT&T, like, I knew when I saw 5GE, I slapped my forehead, I kind of groaned, and I said, gosh, I can't believe they're doing this. But a lot of people, including in this survey, did not think that. They said, ooh, I got an upgrade. And I think that the thing is that it's just not fair when companies are not treating people well, right? When they're not thinking of the best interests of the people who don't know about this stuff.
Yeah.
And those are the people who are the most important to be careful about because they can get burned bad, and that's really not okay.
Yeah, and that's the thing about it is I'm clearly not very tech savvy. I know enough to get by, but I wish I knew more just because it's become, you know, so important and kind of dangerous to be ignorant of this kind of technology because you're liable to be swindled, you're liable to be the victim of something terrible if that happens.
Yeah, but the way I think about this is that I look at it in the same way that I think of cars, right? Most people don't know how a drivetrain works. And they don't really want to learn how it works. They
know
it's important because it gets them from A to B every day. But when it comes to mechanics, they're like, gosh, I don't know if I can trust my mechanic. I should learn more about this, but I'm not gonna. And they just get frustrated. I think technology is very similar for a lot of people. So we have to approach this as making sure that the people who know stuff like you and me are really putting pressure on the companies and on the government to make sure that they are doing the right by everybody. Because it can't just be on every individual person. Well, if you didn't understand what 5GE was, you're a dummy. Yeah. That's not fair. That's not nice to people. And it's assuming that they have too much time. People have more important things to do in their lives, like, you know, watching the sequel to Oz. So, you know, that's really, like, that's the way I think about this stuff all the time.
Well, you know, that's a really great analogy that you made about it's like driving. It's like a car. I mean, you know, like, for those of us who have driven cars and owned cars, I know nothing about how to fix a car. If something goes wrong, I take it right to the mechanic. And I think that's the way, you know, that's a great analogy that you make about this technology, about the phones, about the computers, about the laptops and stuff like that, that we don't know really how it works. Just take it to an expert and have them deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is that unlike the car world, which I'm not criticizing, but I will point out, there's a lot of websites devoted to helping you understand technology.
Yeah.
And I feel like in a way that we try to deconstruct it in a way that is much easier than it is to deal with cars. And I really feel good about that, right?
Yeah.
And we also are really willing to call out these companies when they screw up. Like, you know, you look at all the blunders Samsung has had over the years with the Note 7 that blew up and then the Fold phone that they came out with in April that literally had the screen breaking in reviewers' hands, and they were about to sell it to people later that week for $2,000. And those types of things, just like seeing the industry get pushback from the reviewers and from the news reporters who are trying to keep an eye in the interest of the readers, I think is really good. It's healthy and it's helpful.
Yeah. Okay, great. Ian, hang on. And when we come back, Ian, we got to talk about your summer TV buyer's guide, okay?
Absolutely.
Okay, Ian, hang on. Ian Schur is with us. He joins us usually about once a month for some tech talk. He is with CNET.com, editor-at-large. Check out CNET.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Ian Schur. That's I-A-N. S-H-E-R-R. Ian Schur from CNET, more tech talk, and we're going to tell you how to give you a guide on buying TVs for this summer. That's coming up right after this on 720 WGN. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Here, 18 stories about beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Wednesday, Wild Card Wednesday. Get those requests in. We'll play them later. Any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. And, of course, on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. Okay. Joining us right now is Ian Schur, editor-at-large for CNET.com. And we love to talk tech with Ian. Let's get back to the conversation. Ian, welcome back.
Hey, how are you doing?
All right. Okay. CNET has published the How to Buy a TV Summer 2019 update, and this is pretty thorough right here. So tell us about this.
Yeah, so the big thing that, and I love, by the way, our TV team. They are the most awesome people, and they break this stuff down. Talk about an industry that's hard to understand. I'm like, big screen, give me that. And they explain all the stuff that you need to know. So first off, the most important thing to know right now is that this is actually a pretty bad time to buy a TV.
Mm.
It turns out that this is when the cost of TVs is relatively high. So the times when they refresh the TVs, right, they get rid of the old ones, they get the new ones, is usually around March or April, because that's just when the Super Bowl is over. They're clearing out all the old stuff,
sure,
putting in the new.
Yeah, yeah.
So it turns out that the best time to buy a TV typically is around Black Friday, duh, and around the Super Bowl, especially right after, because then they're clearing them all out.
Wow,
so
that's,
if you're going to buy a TV,
yeah,
if you have to, what they recommend is that you make sure you actually find one of 2018's TVs, because those are like $300 cheaper right now than the 2019 TVs. They have almost all the same features, and the differences are really minor. The other thing which they said is that, you know, unless you're looking for something like Roku or specific things like that, do not get caught up in all these special extras that they try to pile on the TV. The biggest things you need to know about buying a TV is that bigger is always better. And this is true. Most people that we talk to say that the number one thing that they're frustrated with when they get home and get the TV set up is they feel like they got one that was too small. So always get 40 inches or bigger for a TV for your bedroom. and at least 55 inches for your living room or main TV. 65 inches or better, larger is even better.
Wow.
And the other thing is, there are three letters to always keep in mind. HDR. It's a new, it's a technology called Ultra. It's high dynamic range. It makes sure that the blacks are blacker, the colors are more saturated, and it just looks beautiful. And a lot of the new stuff coming out supports it, including Netflix. The other thing is 4K. It's at this point where it's worth getting,
yeah.
even though you may not be using it very much. A lot of the stuff coming out in the next 10 years is going to really start pushing 4K, including the video game consoles from Microsoft and from Sony that are coming out next year. They are going to be 4K as well. So everything's starting to move in that direction. And, you know, if you're going to buy one, you should.
Okay. And by the way, I do want to mention again one more time, your TV people did a fantastic job with this article because there's so many details. I mean, they go into voice control. They go into remote controls. They do the smart
Absolutely.
TV, the smart TV, the Roku TV, which I have a Roku TV at home. And the picture, the quality of the picture, and it goes through all of that and answers all of your frequently asked questions, your FAQs. It's a really terrific piece that people should check out on CNET.com. And if you're looking to buy a TV this summer, you really, really, really need to check out this article because it goes into great detail. Very good job.
And I'll tell you, I saw the advertising for Quantum Dots when I first heard about these new TVs that were coming out. And I slapped my forehead. I'm like, what the heck is a quantum dot?
Yeah.
I just understood what OLED was. And so they do an amazing job explaining all of this terrible marketing gimmickry and really explaining in English. So it's
yeah.
worth reading through that.
Absolutely, yeah. Because, I mean, it can be intimidating when you're going to buy a big appliance. You know what I mean? When
you intimidating.
When you make any kind of big purchase in any field, but especially in technology or TV or anything like that, it can be really confusing. So the more you know, the better off you're going to be. So check that out. All right. Let's move on to there was a piece that was written on CNET there about AdBlock Plus. Let's talk a little bit about the details of that.
Yeah, so one of the interesting things, you may not have heard of this thing before. One of your nerdy friends may have installed it on your computer at some point. What it is it's a program you can download, and what it'll do is it'll run in the background, and it'll remove a lot of the tracking advertising that you run across on the internet by default. And the whole idea behind it is that this company that created it really wanted to fight back against basically what Facebook does for a living. And it's a really interesting idea, right? There's a lot of, and they've caused a lot of debate within the industry. And by industry, I mean within the tech industry and also within media, because people like me, for example, my salary is funded through advertising, as it is for a lot of people. And so there's a concern that will these apps possibly hurt the future of media? And I think what's really interesting is that it's causing this conversation throughout the tech industry. Well, how should it be used? When is the right time to use it? You know, this pressure from Apple and from Microsoft to encourage a lot more privacy on the internet is really interesting to watch. And they're actually building AdBlock's technology into a lot of browsers now. So we're starting to see increasing efforts to kind of roll back the privacy stuff and the tracking that's happening online, but it's being done in this very interesting way that's causing a lot of friction and causing a lot of debate. So it's really interesting to read about and figure out.
Yeah, AdBlock Plus. I was not aware of this, but it is an option in some. It's built in some browsers, and that's improving, correct?
Yes, and not only that, it's being either built into some browsers or it's something that you can install on your browser. And you can actually, for the one of the best features of it is that you can create what's called a whitelist, right? Sites that you're okay with them showing ads to you because you want them to be able to be supported. So obviously you would put CNET and WGN on there, and then there are a couple others that you would add as well. But it's one of the ways to show that, you know, look, I understand that these websites still need to make money. I just don't want to be tracked as heavily as I have been.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really interesting to see people push back in that way.
Yeah, you know, it's sometimes it's really annoying. I mean, there are more some websites more than others. Some websites that you go to, it's just ad after ad after ad. They pop up. They're in the corner. They're in the. It's sometimes it's absolutely annoying.
Yeah, and I think even the browser makers realize that, which is why we're starting to see just all of this aggressive pushback. I mean, Apple has been pushing so hard. It's part of their advertising now. They really are starting to make themselves into this company that really values your privacy. And, you know, you can debate Apple all you want, but it's really interesting to see that they think they can get real leverage out of this and that they can make a name for themselves as being a place for privacy.
Yeah. I love that it's anti-advertising in their advertising.
Yes, absolutely.
I think that's pretty great. So, yeah. But anyway, if you want all the details about AdBlock Plus, again, another piece that's on CNET.com. All right, let's talk about this. New York privacy bill could ban selling phone location data. This is an interesting story right here.
Yeah, so part of what's happened here is that there was this amazing story that came out a few months ago where it turned out that the location data of people was being sold to various people. And we're talking about, like, for example, people who are trying to track down people because they owe them debts or stuff like that. And it was really, really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Originally, the idea of selling this location data was, for example, if I'm Sears, and or let's not use Sears because they're almost gone, but maybe if I'm Old Navy, right? And I have a ad that I want to send to people that are nearby my store. I'm going to have 15% off for the next 20 minutes. I could ask AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, and T-Mobile for the location data of everyone who's one of my customers who's within a certain radius of every one of my stores and then send them all a text message if they already had said, I want updates from Old Navy. And somebody would send them out and it would tell you I have a sale and you would all come in and spend money with me. And it would be really cool. The problem is that that's not how the system was used. There were a lot of people who used it to do really kind of very questionably uncomfortable things, violating a lot of people's privacy.
Yeah, yeah.
And so now we have New York saying, okay, not cool. We're going to write a law that says you cannot just sell this location data at all. The proposed bill includes a $1,000 fine per violation and a maximum threat penalty of $10,000 per day, per person, for location data shared against the law.
Wow.
So they really want to make sure that this doesn't happen.
And if it's passed, it's going to take 120 days for the bill to become a law, correct?
Yeah, which is, I mean, it's not that uncommon because a lot of times they want to make sure that they're allowing for existing systems to be changed and all that stuff. And, you know, it's normal to see that stuff. It's very rare for a law to suddenly kick in unless it's like funding something in the government.
Yeah, that's great. It's interesting. All right, we'll keep an eye on that. All right, Ian, always a pleasure.
Always, absolutely.
Always a pleasure to talk to you. Everybody should check you out. Follow you on Twitter at Ian Scherr. That's IanSHERR. And you can always check him out at CNET.com. We'll do more Tech Talk again soon, Ian. Thanks, and have a great day.
Absolutely. Take care.
Okay, there you go. Ian Scherr, everybody, from CNET.com. We'll talk to him again next month for more Tech Talk. All right, we'll take a quick break here for the news on 720 WGN.
I fall off my chair and I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yes, right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Wednesday, Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. And, and that song was forever changed in 1992. I used to just like, oh, that's a really cool song. That's fun. Now I just see Michael Madsen dancing and cutting a cop's ear off. So, who requested that?
That's coming to us from Lisa.
Lisa. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're going to talk about ratings, movie ratings. You know, the rating system has always been deeply, deeply stupid and flawed. So we're going to give you some examples of that. And then, everybody loves new flavors of pop. You know, like Coke's got all these new fancy flavors in their Diet Coke with their peaches and their vanillas and all that stuff. We'll find out some more weird flavored pop from around the world and that. But I want to talk about this. You know, some people, a lot of us don't realize that there have been sequels that have been made to movies, and you're like, what? They made a sequel to that? And indeed they did. And there's a lot of them. Now, we might know about some of them, you know, but many of them that are mentioned in this article, and this is an article from Collider.com, that talks about, like, the craziest sequels, insane sequels that you probably didn't even know existed, but they do. These are real sequels. And here's what they do as the intro. It says, sequels are a part of the circle of Hollywood life. If a film does well enough, audiences have learned to expect that a part two won't be far off. We've also come to understand that sequels are generally not as good as the original. It's hard to replicate success after all. That said, sometimes popular movies spawn sequels that are so bad you won't believe that they even exist. See how many of these terrible sequels that you've heard of. Bonus points if you've actually seen them. Now, if you want to jump in on this, I mean, I'm going to go through these sequels that we probably maybe didn't even know existed. But I want to talk about sequels. If you guys want to jump in to get into the conversation, you can call us or text us. What are some sequels that you liked? What are some good sequels? And there are many of them that are good. I can think of like five right off the top of my head of sequels that are actually like really, really good. In some cases, some sequels are actually better than the first one. We were talking earlier about how I prefer Gremlins 2, the new batch, to the original Gremlins. And that happens sometimes. So if you want to jump in here, 312-981-7200. But here are some sequels that we can't believe exist. How about American Psycho 2?
Oh, this is the one with Mila Kunis.
Mila Kunis. Originally written under the title of The Girl Who Wouldn't Die, this 2002 direct-to-DVD film was quickly changed into an American Psycho sequel to capitalize on that film's critical and commercial success. In it, Mila Kunis plays a serial-murdering college student stalking her criminology professor, played by William Shatner. I did not see this. Kunis later stated that she had signed on to make The Girl Who Wouldn't Die and had no idea that it was being Frankensteined into an American Psycho film. In an interview with MTV, she said it was supposed to be a different project and it was re-edited, but oh, I don't know, it just turned out really bad. Yeah. I have not seen it.
I think I caught bits of it on cable.
There's a still here of Mila Kunis looking all creepy with very long curly hair rubbing William Shatner's shoulders. And that's enough for me to say, nah. So, American Psycho 2.
It has nothing to do with the original, really, in any way, shape, or form.
Her name's not Bateman. It doesn't.
It's not making fun of yuppies.
No.
It's just got the name.
Yeah. God, I loved American Psycho.
Oh, Mary Harron is a genius.
So good. And what they did, because that book was reprehensible. That book was horrible. And what they ended up doing, making it the satire that it was. Bret Easton Ellis hates it. Good. I love that movie. Bale's amazing in it.
Yeah. I just love the big monologue he gives in the beginning as he's getting ready for work. And he peels the thing off. I'm like, oh.
It's so good. I mean, that scene where he's about to chop up Jared Leto, when he's talking about Huey Lewis.
Yeah.
Come on, man. It's the best. How about this? Kindergarten Cop 2.
Dolph Lundgren?
Yeah.
I'm a little bit afraid that I know a few of these. You're probably going to know these.
I did not know that they made a Kindergarten Cop 2 with Dolph Lundgren. Kindergarten Cop has the distinction of being a movie that is exactly what it sounds like. Arnold Schwarzenegger plays Detective John Kimble, who goes undercover as a kindergarten teacher in order to trap a villainous drug dealer. He shouts at several small children along the way. Kindergarten Cop 2 was released directly to video 26 years after the original, but no theater could be convinced to screen it. Featuring zero actors or characters from the original film, they replaced Arnold Schwarzenegger with Dolph Lundgren. Apparently, it seemed like a bulletproof strategy. And by the way, there are stills for the, if you want to see this full article, you can see the stills that accompany the article. They're hilarious. You can go to our Facebook page right now. You should like us. Check out our Facebook page. And it's facebook.com/NickDShow, facebook.com/NickDShow. This picture, it looks like they're replicating the scene where he goes, shut up!
Yeah. I won't lie. I never really found the original Kindergarten Cop endearing.
I thought it sucked. I thought Kindergarten Cop. And you know what? I mean, there's Ivan Reitman, right?
I'm not entirely sure.
Because I know Twins was Ivan Reitman. And I hated Twins. And I just thought Twins, hey, get it? He's big and he's small, but they're twins.
It is Ivan Reitman.
Yeah.
Oh,
it disappoints me because I think Ivan Reitman's a terrific filmmaker. But I don't like either of the Schwarzenegger comedies that he did. I think Kindergarten Cop was pretty terrible. Although Penelope Ann Miller's in it, so it's got that going for it. I love Penelope Ann Miller.
It's not a tumor.
Oh, she's great. Penelope Ann Miller is great. Yeah, Carlito's Way. Come on, man. Come on. What the hell? The Freshman? Oh, come on. You've seen The Freshman, right?
I've never seen The
Freshman. Oh, no. Hold it. Hold on a minute
now.
Hold on.
Let me get out my Amazon account.
Hold on a minute. No. You have to see The Freshman. This is required viewing. Matthew Broderick, Marlon Brando, Penelope Ann Miller.
Wait, hold on.
This is a magnificent movie. You have to see The Freshman.
They put Matthew Broderick in a movie with Marlon Brando?
Andrew Bergman, man. It's unbelievable. You got to see The Freshman. You have to. Oh, it's so good. All right, we're talking sequels. Here's Ike on WGN. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick. How's it going with you?
All right.
Yeah, this is a very, very underrated sequel. I still, to this day, it doesn't get a lot, though. It gets a lot of flack. Predator 2?
Predator 2 is great.
Absolutely,
it's great.
Absolutely.
It's great. I like it just as much as the first one. I think Predator 2 is great, and I think everybody in it is great. I love Danny Glover. I think Gary Busey is fantastic in that movie.
Oh, absolutely. He really sold the show. And going back to Arnold, the reason why he didn't do it was because there was a poll on which movie his fans were psyched to see, either Terminator 2 or Predator 2. And that character that Gary Busey played, that was supposed to be Arnold coming back as his character.
Oh.
But the polls was for Terminator 2 the most, so he had to go film Terminator 2 instead.
Yeah.
The movie's still great without him.
Oh, yeah, of course it is. Yeah. All right, Ike, thanks, man.
No problem.
You like because you like all the Predator. You even like those stupid Alien and Predator movies.
Yeah, I love the.
But Predator 2 is great.
Predator 2 is so good.
And that's Steven. Oh, man. He directed a. Why am I blanking on his name? He directed a nightmare movie, too.
Stephen Hopkins.
Hopkins, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's.
It's good, man.
It's a really underrated sequel. It's really out there. Bill Paxton is going insane in that movie.
And Busey.
Yeah.
So, no, that's a great... I love Predator 2.
Lions and tigers and bears? Yeah. Oh, my.
Yeah. No, he's great. I really love that movie. I really do. Now, listen, getting back to The Freshman.
Mm-hmm.
You have to see this movie. It's extraordinary. And it's funny as hell. And Brando and Matthew Broderick, everybody in it is great. Great satire. Andrew Bergman, who I think is one of the best comedic writers ever in movies. He wrote The In-Laws, for God's sake. And...
Was he working on Blazing Saddles?
He worked. He co-wrote Blazing Saddles.
Yeah.
He, no, this guy has got pedigree, man, when it comes to comedy. And it's a beautiful movie. And after you see it, I have to, because there are some insane behind-the-scenes stories about The Freshman, because Brando's in it. So, of course, there are insane.
Oh, and he wrote Fletch.
Yeah. He wrote Fletch. No, Andrew Bergman's the deal, man. He's.
Yeah. I love Fletch.
He made a great movie called So Fine with Ryan O'Neal and Jack Warden. A great farce. Great. He's got his name attached to a lot of really great movies, Andrew Bergman. So, but yeah, so you got to see it. And then I'll tell you some of these behind the scenes stories once you see the movie, because the stories won't be as funny if you haven't seen the movie, because the movie turned out so well, but it was just, he was insane. Brando insane. And the stuff that he put Bergman through and the cast through, and it's just great stories, but you have to see the movie in order to appreciate it more.
Like Island of Dr. Moreau level? Oh, boy.
Yes. No, not quite on that level. Island of Dr. Moreau is off the charts.
That's like the peak of Crazy Brando.
Yeah. I mean, that's the peak of Crazy Brando and Crazy Val Kilmer.
I love Crazy Val Kilmer.
Crazy Val Kilmer, Crazy Marlon Brando. They fire the director who was his project.
And then he had to hide as an extra.
Yeah, he went into Beast makeup. And Frankenheimer came in and went, all right, you stand there. Just turn the camera on. Let's go. And it is just the most insane move. Feruza Balk is in it. She was, like, I guess, having an affair with David Thewlis at the time. It was just it was complete insanity. So, no, that's on a different level. That's on a whole.
But this is still some good Crazy Brando.
Crazy Brando.
Love it.
So, all right, how about Backdraft 2?
That's new.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it, but that came out, what, this year? Maybe end of last year?
End of last year, I think. 1991 thriller Backdraft is notable for being a stunt show at the Universal Studios Hollywood now for 18 years and for killing Kurt Russell twice in the span of 2 hours. The film grossed $152 million, received 3 Academy Award nominations, so Universal wisely decided to make a sequel in 2019. The film hasn't been released at the time of this writing. I think it has now.
It has now. It's straight to DVD.
This is likely due to the fact that it's direct-to-streaming sequel of a 30-year-old film being released 10 years after Universal closed the Backdraft attraction. But William Baldwin and Donald Sutherland are back. Why is Donald Sutherland back?
Why not?
Wasn't he like in? Wasn't he in prison or something in that movie?
I couldn't tell you. I think I saw Backdraft once AMC or something.
I mean, despite the cast, despite the fact that Kurt Russell is in it, I don't like Backdraft, and that's a lot for me not to like a movie with Kurt Russell in it. Because I even like Captain Ron. I mean, that's how far I go with Kurt Russell.
What?
I like Captain Ron. Yeah. Yeah, one of three movies in which he wears an eye patch. Kurt Russell, I believe, is the only guy who wears an eye patch in three different movies. So,
yeah.
Unless somebody played a pirate in a bunch of movies, you know.
But who went? I don't know. Maybe two, but not three.
Not three, man. Three
now,
separate
now,
movies.
Now there's Captain Ron to be
Captain
watched.
Ron rules, man. Son of the Mask. This is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. One of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. Jim Carrey's 1994 hit The Mask was a fun comedic adventure and special effects bonanza. Also directed by a Nightmare on Elm Street alum, if I'm not mistaken. I believe Chuck Russell directed The Mask, if I'm...
The original Mask?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the Mask comic book is, like, really violent and really all over
the
place.
Is that right?
Yeah, New Line really... who's the head of New Line?
Robert Shea.
Yeah, Robert Shea really wanted this to be, like, his next nightmare.
Oh.
Because it's a really twisted
well,
comic
for,
book.
Well, for a long time, you know, New Line was known as the studio that Freddy built.
Yeah.
That's what it was known as.
Yeah. So he was looking for,
yeah.
I think by that time, Freddy's Dead had probably already come out.
1991, Freddy's Dead came out.
Yeah, so they were looking for their next thing.
Yeah,
and but they decided to play it as a comedy, and it worked.
So 11 years later, The Son of the Mask comes out, and they traded Jim Carrey for Jamie Kennedy.
It's the most unfunny person of all time.
It's an unwatchable movie. Jamie Kennedy, by the way, is a nice guy.
I'm sure he is.
He's a real nice guy. He came to Flashback because they did a Scream reunion, and he's a really, really funny and nice guy. And I love him in Scream.
I think he's great
in Scream.
It's just so weird to think that's the same guy. Like, well, Jamie Kennedy, who plays this kind of almost Tarantino-esque film nerd.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He does it pitch perfect. I love him in Scream, too.
I love him in all the Scream movies. They kill him in Scream, too, don't they?
Kill him in Scream, too.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's great in both of those Scream movies.
Yeah.
And then this is where his career winds
up?
Well, no.
Do you remember his prank show?
Yeah, the
Jamie Kennedy experiment?
Yeah.
On the
Jesus.
WB?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, but yeah, Son of the Mask, a sequel that actually exists, and it shouldn't. All right, let's take a break. We're talking sequels, too. If you want to jump in, generic sequel talks are your favorites, the good ones. But I've got some ones that shouldn't exist, but they do. 312-981-7200. Catch Living Healthy Chicago this Saturday at 9 a.m. Learn about the struggles and successes of everyday Chicagoans with health and fitness. Living Healthy, Saturday at 9 a.m. on WGN-TV. Boy, Renegade. Yes, by Styx. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here above beautiful downtown Chicago on this Wednesday morning. It's Wildcard Wednesday. You mean Wildcard Wednesday? That's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. Who requested the sticks?
Let me pull that up here for you. That's coming to us from David.
David. All right.
He knew you would want to. If you're going to hear a stick song, it might as well be Renegade.
It's the only one. I taped 2 hours of radio while I went to Old Chicago just in case they played Renegade. And they did. Hey, we're talking sequels, and I'm reading an article here from Collider. And again, you can see this full article, complete with pictures and everything. It's linked right to our Facebook page. So you should follow us and like us on Facebook and go there now at facebook.com/NickDShow. And we're talking about sequels that maybe you don't know ever existed, like crazy sequels. And we got some texts here just about sequels in general. Rooster Cogburn, Tom says. Yes, the sequel to True Grit, Rooster Cogburn. Dan and Mary say the follow-up, The Mummy Returns from 2001, was as good as the first one or better. I agree. I love The Mummy Returns. I love it.
But speaking of terrible CGI.
Well, yeah.
That the Scorpion King,
the Scorpion
CGI
King
is
stuff is terrible.
Unbearable.
Yeah. 708 area code. I know you're not excited for Top Gun 2, but we know it's going to be good either way since the original is a beloved guilty pleasure. Yeah, no. No.
I like Top Gun. I like it. Yeah. It's fun.
No.
Well, you know Tom Cruise is actually flying the planes in the sequel.
I'm not surprised by that. He's a lunatic.
I just love that.
Listen,
as a fact.
He's insane, and in a good way.
Yes.
I mean, you know, that scene in the I don't even, was it Ghost Protocol when he was on the building in Dubai? Was that Ghost Protocol?
Yeah, Ghost Protocol is when he's on the building in Dubai.
Ridiculous.
Hanging off a plane in Rogue Nation, and then in Fallout, he's...
Well, there's 9,000 things he does in Fallout that are
but
insane.
But it's the Halo jump.
Yeah.
That's just completely crazy.
It's completely. He's nuts. He's nuts. But you know what? He wants it to look like it's him. He wants it to be authentic. And that adds to the reason why those movies work so much.
Well, yeah, it sucks you in knowing that it's actually, he's doing it. It's not a stunt double.
Yeah.
It makes things so much easier because then they don't rely on cheap CGI.
And
they
by the way,
go for it.
By the way, Christopher McQuarrie has turned into a top level action director.
I can't even believe it.
It's insane. All right, let's break here. We got the news coming up. Everybody hang on. We're talking about sequels that you didn't know existed and just sequels in general, ones that you liked. 312-981-7200. The news is up after this.
I was alone. I took a ride. I didn't know what I would find there. Another road where maybe I could find another kind of mind there. Ooh, then I suddenly see you. Ooh, did I tell you I
I'm blanking on who this is, but obviously Beatles cover. I'm trying to remember who it is.
Well, he's a funny guy.
Oh, it's Jerry Lewis, right?
No,
it's not Jerry Lewis.
Not like a clown funny.
Oh, it's Pesci, right?
Yeah.
That's right.
Little Joe,
yeah,
sure
right.
Can sing.
Yeah. Yeah. Who requested that?
It's coming to us from Dino.
You know who does a great cover of that?
Who?
Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Oh, you know what? I have heard that. It's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're going to cover the Beatles, do it like that. You know who else does a great cover of Beatles? Elton John. Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
Mm-hmm. It's a solid cover.
Yep. There's a lot of Beatles covers.
A few good ones out there,
There's a lot of good ones out there, yeah. We are talking about sequels that you didn't know existed. Like, what the hell? They made a sequel to that? They made a Kindergarten Cop sequel? Huh? So I got a bunch of those, and you can check out the article with the pictures at our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. But then, in general, we're just talking about sequels if you want to jump in. Got some text here I'll get to in a second. Here's Rich on WEGN. Go ahead, Rich.
Hi, good morning, Nick.
Hi.
I had to chime in on this just from some of the vitriol I felt with a few sequels that I was really looking forward to seeing, and they just, my God, why did they even think of making them? One of them was 2010.
Yeah, I actually like that movie, Rich.
Don't get me wrong, Nick. It's a decent movie, but trying to capture the momentum and the spirit of the first one,
well,
they're night and day.
No, they are, and I think that was kind of the point. What Kubrick did with 2001, you can't repeat. By the way, Matthew C. Hoffman, who runs the Pickwick Theater, Park Ridge Film. they're going to show in September. They come back with their new season in the mega theater at the Pickwick. They're showing 2001. Keir Dulé is going to be there.
You serious?
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll have Matthew on before that to talk about, but that's going to be huge. But anyway, no, look, I love 2001. Obviously, it's amazing, but I really like 2010 as a complete, just a straight up regular science fiction movie, not compared to the first one.
And, I agree with that. And one other one that's in the same vein, and you'll probably agree with me on this one, Exorcist 2.
All right. You know, here's the thing about Exorcist 2. I happen to like Exorcist 2. I'm in the minority. Most people hate Exorcist 2, but I like it. It's an insane movie. There's no question about it. But again, I know it's hard to separate yourself from the original when you see it.
Right. But that's what these guys are trying. I mean, they're trying to make it that way. There's only one director I found. Tell me if you can think of another one. I'm having a hard time with it. The only director I can think of who is a different director, took a phenomenal first movie, did a sequel, made it both different yet same enough where you got enough of what the old movie was and more of what a new movie was, and they were both phenomenal, and that was Cameron with Aliens.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's
I can't think of another director. Can you?
Well, that's widely considered probably one of the best sequels of all time is Aliens. To take a classic movie and add to it and make it a different kind of movie. But yeah, Rich, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Now, do you like Exorcist 2?
I think I like it better than the average bear might enjoy.
Well, everybody hates it.
The fact that I would even watch it seems like a radical act.
Here's the thing. I love John Borman.
Yeah, John Borman's amazing.
He's a genius. And I will fully admit that The Heretic is bat crap crazy. There's no question about it. Mm-hmm. And Richard Burton is ridiculous in it. But it's got that Borman touch that I love, because he makes a lot of crazy movies.
He does.
Did you see The Emerald Forest?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic movie. Deliverance, Hope and Glory is one of my favorite movies ever made.
He's a fascinating director.
Yeah, he is. And he made Zardoz, for God's sake.
The gun is good.
Oh, my God. So there's something weird about Borman. But although his, you know, Hope and Glory. Have you seen Hope and Glory?
I have not.
Oh, man, you got to see it. Mm-hmm. You got to see it. Have people in your family seen it?
Hope and Glory.
Hope and Glory is about living in London during World War II and during the air raids.
I'm gonna say probably.
It's a beautiful movie.
If I brought it up, they'd probably say
it's autobiographical. It's John Borman autobiographical. It is a beautiful movie. 1988, 89, I want to say. It is a beautiful film. One of my favorite movies of the 80s. But I have a soft spot for Borman, so that's why I like Heretic. It's a crazy movie,
well,
but I like it.
And one of the most celebrated film critics of all time went to bat for that movie. Pauline Kael.
For Heretic?
Heretic.
Of course she did.
Loved it.
Of course she did.
So there's clearly something to it.
Another thing I loved about Pauline Kael, God bless her, was she loved Brian De Palma.
Yeah.
Loved Brian De Palma. I remember when Casualties of War came out, and Casualties of War was one of those movies that was very divisive. A lot of people hate that movie. Mm-hmm. I think it's a masterpiece. I think it's one of De Palma's best movies. And I remember, like, she wrote two separate reviews in The New Yorker because people hated it, so she went out and wrote another review. Like a 5-page essay on why Brian De Palma is a genius and why Casualties of War is one of the greatest movies ever made.
She was a fan from day one. I think she was one of the few people that pushed Greetings.
Yeah,
when that came out.
Absolutely. No. She was a massive fan of Brian De Palma. She gave Bonfire of the Vanities a good review. So did I.
I can't follow you down that path.
I'm in that same boat with Pauline Kael when it comes to De Palma. I liked Wise Guys with Joe Piscopo.
Honestly, Wise Guys is fun.
It's funny. You know why? Captain Lou Albano. he's a genius in that movie. All right, here are some more sequels that we didn't know exist. Oh, God. S. Darko. 2001's Donnie Darko was released in October of 2001, introducing the world to the first of many oddball creeps played by Jake Gyllenhaal, effectively erasing the stench of Bubble Boy. Bubble Boy's a funny movie. I like Bubble Boy. A decade later, they produced a direct-to-video sequel that tells the story of Samantha Darko, Donnie's younger sister from the first film. Presumably, the decision was made because Donnie is killed in the original film. And by 2009, Gyllenhaal had risen beyond the reach of Fox home video budget. Have you ever seen S. Darko?
Yes.
It's unwatchable.
Yeah, because me and my... This was at the time when we first discovered Donnie Darko. We were like, oh, man, this is it.
It's great.
This is cinema. And then when we found out there was a sequel, like, oh, this is going to be great. Watched it. It was horrible. But then we discovered Southland Tales.
Well, Southland Tales is on a whole nother level, man.
Some friendships ended over that one.
Oh, I can believe it. I tell you, I do not, and I know, you know, Richard Kelly's never going to work again.
No.
I went to go see Southland Tales at the Chicago Critics Film Festival a couple of years ago, and Kelly was there. And they did a Q&A, and he hasn't made a movie since The Box. And The Box is amazing. The Box with James Marsden and Cameron Diaz
yeah.
Frank Langella. I love that movie. And at first, I remember during the first half hour, 45 minutes of it, I was like, okay, Richard Kelly's doing a commercial movie. He's doing an accessible movie because he almost got ran out of town after Southland Tales. Okay, fine. And then it turns into a Richard Kelly movie.
That it does. The scene it certainly does.
It's a distinctive moment, the scene in the library, and then it's like, oh.
If there's any way to describe that movie, it's on brand.
It's so great. I love Richard Kelly. I will say this.
He's brave.
I do not like his director's cut of Donnie Darko. I prefer the original commercial.
The original cut is totally fine.
And I hated Southland Tales the first time I saw it. That's one of those movies where, there are movies in your life. You ever do a 180 on a movie? You ever see it and go, oh, that sucked. And then you come back and you go, oh, it's pretty good. Or
there's been a few.
Well, Southland Tales is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Southland Tales is one of them.
That I had to be sat down with someone who, like, when I first watched it, I think we might have even turned it off. But then I was sat down literally with someone who was going to bat for it. Actually, my old assistant manager from the theater, he absolutely loves that movie, and he's like, nah, man. Here's the deal. And he sat
me down. It's a great movie.
Yeah.
The circumstances were a little bit weird when I first saw Southland Tales. I was massively hungover. Let me just say that. I was massively hungover.
And that's the last movie you need to be watching.
And I saw it at the Piper's Alley, which was a theater that I hated. I hated that theater. And it was like 11 a.m. And it was weird, and I was having a hard, because I was so hungover, I was having a hard time following with, and it's a hard movie to follow anyway, even if you're,
oh, sure.
if you're not hungover and you're, you know.
Sober as a clam.
Exactly. But then I was tooling around on the internet, or not on the internet, on cable, and it's about to start on HBO. It's like 2:30 in the morning. And I watched it, and I was like, man, this movie rules. I was like, wow. So, yeah, but that sequel that S. Darko, no. No, thank you. How about Dumb and Dumberer, When Harry Met Lloyd? Remember that one? Where they got a couple of jackasses to play the early versions of the Jeff Daniels and Jim Carrey.
Yeah. There's only one good part of that movie.
I don't even remember. What?
When Bob Saget is screaming, like there's a recurring bit where Bob Saget thinks he is, it's like chocolate or something, but he thinks it's excrement.
And I don't even remember.
He's just screaming for minutes on end. I'm covered in,
Yeah. I don't even remember. Oh. I saw the movie Dumb and Dumberer. But how about this? Ace Ventura Jr., Pet Detective.
No. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Let's see. Warner Home Video decided that they were going to continue the series after When Nature Calls. The Jim Carrey-less Ace Ventura Jr. Pet Detective was unleashed on home video and cable TV markets in 2007. It follows the adventures of Ace Ventura's son, Ace Ventura Jr., played by Josh Flitter, as he tries to prove his mom didn't steal a panda. Recasting the lead of a crude comedy series as a young kid was already a dubious choice, but the movie goes one further. They explain Carrie's absence by saying the elder Ventura died in a plane crash in the Bermuda Triangle. Jeez.
A little bit dark.
Jeez. Deep Blue Sea 2. Was not aware they made a sequel to Deep Blue Sea 2. I guess I was aware, but I have not seen it.
I figured it would have happened at some point.
20 years, nearly 20 years after the original's release, DVD, straight to DVD, zero original cast members. They even recast the sharks. The sequel is the lowest of low budget, featuring cheap wooden sets and performances cut from the same material, featuring characters with names like Dr. Misty Calhoun and Trent Slater.
Dr. Misty Calhoun.
If you, by the way, anybody seen these stupid sequels, if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. All right, here's a couple of quick texts. I like all three of the first Jason Bourne movies. Of course, a classic, Breaking 2, Electric Boogaloo, which is one of the greatest titles in film history.
Yeah.
Brian says, how about the sequel to American Graffiti, More American Graffiti? I didn't think it was as bad as everybody else did. It's not, I mean, it's not even on par with the original, but I didn't think it was as terrible as everybody else. Isn't there a sequel to Of All Things Mannequin? Yes, Christy Swanson. Buffy is the,
the original Buffy.
Deadly Friend. You've seen Deadly Friend, right?
Yeah.
Deadly Friend, where she whips a basketball at Anne Ramsey's head and her head explodes. It's the, one of the greatest moments in Craven's film history. Somebody goes off here on Alien 3.
Well, they're wrong.
A complete slap in the face to aliens. You have all the characters. Those characters go through a big epic battle with xenomorphs, and they win, and you kill them off except for one. Pathetic. I like Alien 3.
I think it's one of the most... Well, part of it has to do with the circumstances of its filming and production, and I totally get it. It is flawed to any standard. But what David Fincher was going for... And what he wanted to do with the franchise is fascinating.
I agree. I like Alien. I like all the Alien movies. I won't go to the Predator movies, but I do like Resurrection as well. I have a tough time with Resurrection simply because of Winona Ryder. Outside of that, I like Winona Ryder, but she's not good.
So,
all right, we got a break here, and we'll come back and we'll talk more sequels that you didn't know existed. So there you go. And that's coming up right after this. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Wild Card Wednesday. You've been Wild Card Wednesday. Three Blind Mice. Who's the Three Stooges fan?
That's David Monroe.
David Monroe. Stooges rule. welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Coming up, Steve Grzanich at 5 o'clock. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We're talking sequels in general. If you guys want to jump in on the conversation with talk or text at 312-981-7200. And I'm telling you about some sequels that you can't believe exist. Like, for instance, Splash 2, T-O-O. Splash, comma, T-O-O. You know they did a made for TV sequel to The Jerk, the Steve Martin movie with Mark Blankfield. Mark Blankfield was an actor who used to be on Fridays, which was that rip off of Saturday Night Live, and it was called The Jerk 2, T-O-O.
That's another weird
made for TV.
That's another weird sequel trope, is when they do 2, T-O-O.
Yeah. Well, that's what Splash 2 did. The original film's massive success meant that a sequel was in the cards, but there was one problem. The movie ends with Hank's character giving up life on land forever to go live in the ocean with the mermaid. The Disney Channel original movie, Splash T-O-O, cleverly gets around that fact by completely ignoring and placing Alan right back on dry land. Hanks, Hannah, Candy, Levy, they didn't bother to reprise their roles for this dismal sequel. I had no idea that that was a thing.
Yeah. The world of Disney Channel original movies is interesting, to say the least.
Teen Wolf 2.
Another T-O-O.
No.
Are you sure?
Yeah, it's number 2.
Oh.
Teen Wolf 2. Obviously, Michael J. Fox would not go back because, you know, Back to the Future. Teen Wolf, the only reason Teen Wolf got released was because of Back to the Future. Like, that was just going to go, like, straight. Teen Wolf, the original Teen Wolf? Could go straight to video, but as soon as Back to the Future took off, the company was like, release it and put it in the theaters now, right now, right now, put it in the theaters now, and it made money. So the studio returned with the Teenage Werewolf for, it is 2, T-O-O.
I knew it.
Yeah, Teen Wolf 2. They cleverly recast the role to the then teen heartthrob Jason Bateman, who was on the other NBC family
Silver
show.
Silver Spoons,
yeah, right?
Right. Oh, my God.
As Scott's cousin Todd. And this one, he was good at boxing instead of basketball.
I just can't get over the words teen heartthrob next to Jason Bateman. Like, that's just so weird to me.
Well, you know, I love Jason Bateman.
He's great.
He's fantastic. Not a massive fan of Ozark, but I like him. And I actually really liked Bad Words, the movie that he directed.
Yeah.
Really liked that movie. But he was. I mean, he was like, he was in Teen Beat. He was in all those magazines.
That's so, because I just know him. He's Michael Bluth.
Yeah. What's funny, because, you know, once that part of his career took off, when Arrested Development took off, and the second half of his career has been so successful, every time he goes on, I guess it's Seth Meyers' show, Seth Meyers pulls out old teen pictures of him. And he's like... 815 area code sends in a text. You can't do it. 312-981-7200. Talk to sequels. Never been a fan of For a Few Dollars More. Oh, come on.
That's actually my favorite of all three of them.
Really?
It's my absolute favorite. I just...
I'm being cliche because it's Good, Bad, and the Ugly for me.
Sure, of course. I mean, you're picking between three of the best Westerns.
They're amazing.
Made.
Yeah. 815 area code says Teen Wolf 2, bad. Yes. Star Trek 2, Wrath of Khan, great. That's actually one of the best sequels of all time. There's no question about it.
Ricardo Montalban.
He's the king. Exorcist 3, very good. Exorcist 3 is great.
Brad Dourif.
My God.
Who would have thought that William Peter Blatty could direct?
He directed the hell out of it, too.
Went for it.
And I love his director's cut. I love Legion. If you have the special edition on DVD, you can see his cut. Now, it's weird because it goes from, you know, they weren't color finished. The print wasn't color finished, and it goes back and forth, but it's his cut. You know, it's a little rough to watch, but if you want to get the idea of what he had in mind when he made it in Legion, it's different. It's a different movie. There's no big, showy exorcism at the end as there is in the. Mm-hmm. It's much more talky. Well, it's a talky movie anyway. Exorcist 3 is a pretty talky movie. Anyway.
This is even more.
Yeah. They put in Return to Oz, my beloved Return to Oz.
Gotta have it.
Yeah, Return to Oz, based on a series of Oz novels by L. Frank Baum, burst into theaters in the exact middle of the 80s. It was considerably darker than the original film, including an electroshock ward and a perpetually decapitated princess who steals other people's heads. You know, good old Disney magic. Shut up. It's a great movie. Oh, here we go. The Rage, Carrie 2. So, I got to tell you, Emily Bergel, who plays Carrie 2 or whatever the hell.
Mm-hmm.
She ended up as Rory's rival in Gilmore Girls. She's one of Rory's rivals in Gilmore Girls. She's fantastic. An actor friend of mine knew her, like went to school with her. And when we took the vinyl shop to New York for the Fringe Festival, Emily Bergel lived in New York. So the cast member who was in Vinyl Shop knows her. So she came to see Vinyl Shop.
Oh, wow.
This is right after Rage, Carrie 2 opened, because it opened in 1999. We were there for the summer of 1999. So she was right out. So she shows up, you know, and she's bombed. She's completely loaded. She's got a bottle of vodka in her hand, like a half a bottle of Absolut vodka in her hand. And she's swigging during the show and laughing and screaming. It was a nightmare. It was a nightmare. I wanted to use telekinesis to shut her up. It was... But the Rage 2, Rage Carrie 2. Did you see the version of Carrie with the beautiful Angela Bettis?
No.
Oh, it's really good. It's made for TV.
Okay.
It's Angela Bettis from May. Mm-hmm. You've seen May,
I've
right?
I've seen May, yeah.
Okay.
So I just did not know that there was a
TV version. It was 4 hours. It was it was a two-part miniseries. It was very, very faithful to the book. And Patricia Clarkson played her, Patricia Clarkson played her mom.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Patricia Clarkson played her mom. It's really good. It's actually really good. And then the most unnecessary Carrie remake was the one with Chloe Grace Moretz and Julianne Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what the hell was that?
I mean, in terms of casting, that was great casting, perfect, but it just, why?
Yeah. That was Chloe Grace Moretz's reputation of starring in unnecessary horror remakes because she was in Let the Right One In or Let Me In, which ridiculous to even try to remake Let the Right One In, which is just a masterpiece. And then Suspiria was good, so shut up. All right, let's take. But before it came out, I was under the impression it's like, oh, she's going to star in another unnecessary horror remake. But it turned out to be great. That was the biggest surprise of last year.
I agree.
The biggest surprise of last year. I was so down on it. At this time last year, I was screaming about how dare you. And then in October, when I saw it, I was like, oh, it's really great. I've seen it like 19 times now.
It's great.
It's so good. All right, let's break here. The news is coming up right after this.
Now available on WGN.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on a Wednesday morning. Wildcard Wednesday. You made Wildcard Wednesday. One artist, any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. All right, Tom, who requested that?
That was Big Bob wanting to hear the Isley Brothers.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with the Isley Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Hey, so, you know, they made a sequel to Deep Blue Sea. What? That's what we're talking about. Reactions like that. Like, they made a sequel to what? So we're talking about sequels that maybe you never even heard of. But if you want to jump in with just your regular sequels, some of the good ones or other ones that are memorable, 312-981-7200. A bunch of texts here. Let me get through those, and then we'll get back to the Collider article on how in God's name did they make a sequel to this movie. Poltergeist 2, dumb as hell. But I saw it as a kid in the H.R. Geiger imagery, notably the boy's braces coming to life and the giant tequila worm coming out of the father's mouth are forever etched in my nightmares. Yeah, Poltergeist 2... I just remember the preacher guy being creepy at the screen door, like he's standing at the screen door screaming. That's the only thing I remember about Poltergeist 2. You know, we were talking about Gary Sherman,
mm-hmm.
the director of Poltergeist 3 and, of course, Vice Squad and other great movies, Chicago guy. He told me a great story because, you know, they actually shot like 70% of Poltergeist 3 in the Hancock Building. Like they
really?
Oh yeah,
that's good. That must have been hell to get permission
and,
for.
Yeah, and they did have some sets elsewhere, but for the most part, it was shot in there. And one of the reasons why I like Poltergeist 3, if you go back and watch that movie, those were all practical effects. Like they did mirrors, the use of mirrors and stuff like that. It's really sort of really brilliant. It's kind of like Bram Stoker's Dracula, the Coppola version, is not a good movie by any stretch of the imagination, but the old school cinematic techniques that he uses in it are great. Like I thought it was really cool that he would go old school on it. Movie sucks, but like the effects and some of the really cool cinematic tricks that he used in that movie were awesome.
Yeah, that's what holds up the most.
Yeah, but that's what Gary Sherman did in Poltergeist 3. But Gary Sherman tells this story. That scene, and this is for, you've seen Poltergeist 3, right?
Yeah, a couple of times.
That scene where Tom Skerritt and Nancy Allen are on the scaffold. And they go over the side of they are pushed out over the side on the scaffold of the Hancock, and then they go down. That was real.
Oh, jeez.
They did that.
Ah, jeez.
So at one point, for some reason, I can't remember the reason why, they're all up on the roof of the Hancock, and I'm already freaking out because I hate heights, and just thinking about this freaks me out.
Mm-hmm.
But at one point, Gary Sherman, for some reason, technical reason, had to climb up the antennae on top of the Hancock Building. Gary Sherman, the director, climbed up one of the antennae. And he said, I made the mistake of turning around and looking back. And I'm like, dude, you're out of your mind.
Yeah, my heart would be in my
Are you kidding me? So, no, and he tells that story. Gary's got a... But that's true, man. All right. How about this? Billy Jack is a sequel. It was a sequel to Born Losers. I love both the movies. Not so much Trial of Billy Jack or Billy Jack Goes to Washington. Those movies are ridiculous.
You know, I was watching Gilmore Girls.
Ah, yes.
I'm season two now. Dean and Rory are back together. It's great. But
that won't last.
No, I can already tell.
I don't want to spoil anything for you.
But that was like they were having a movie night, and that's what they were watching. They were watching Billy Jack.
Well, you saw the interview. You saw the interview with Kimmel and Tarantino, where Tarantino talked about how he wanted Brad Pitt to come over to the house to talk about. You know,
yeah, he's like,
and he had a
35 millimeter.
Like Brad Pitt, Brad Pitt walks in with a copy of Billy Jack.
Yeah,
and Tarantino says, "No, I got it already. That was the movie that I wanted you to watch."
It's Billy Jack.
So now we got to look for some Billy Jack in his performance.
Oh man,
Debbie Does Dallas too. Thank you, pervert. Caribbean Bob, I was one of the few people that actually liked Tron Legacy. Yes, you are one of the few people.
That's one of the only movies I've ever fallen asleep during. I'd like straight up in the theater. Just
yeah, it was not good.
Straight to sleep.
Not good. Trucker Ernie says, bad sequel, Blair Witch 2, Book of Shadows. Oh my God, was that bad.
But you have to admit, it's pretty brave to set the sequel in a world where the movie exists. Like, the characters of Blair Witch 2 saw Blair Witch.
I don't even, honest to God, I don't remember anything about it.
Oh,
I remember hating
it.
It's
so weird.
I remember hating it. And then that, the woods that turned out to be Blair Witch, that was one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life.
It was super disappointing. Super duper.
He said the only good thing about the movie was the redhead dancing around naked. Also, an actor wearing an eye patch in several movies is Samuel L. Jackson. That's true.
Fair.
That's true. All right, how about this? You ready for this? Mm. Look What Happened to Rosemary's Baby.
Wait, they made a sequel to Rosemary's Baby?
ABC Movie of the Week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's just disrespectful.
Look what's happened to Rosemary's Baby. I remember watching it, too. Absolutely awful. Here's what it says. Making a sequel to one of the most famous horror movies of all time is a daunting task. Look no further than Jaws 2. But ABC was up to the challenge. Look What's Happened to Rosemary's Baby premiered on the network in 1976. Feature virtually no one from the iconic and original. We feel sorry for any company that purchased commercial time during this atrocity. I remember watching it. It was terrible.
Yeah, I can't imagine John Cassavetes was really jumping at the bit to be on ABC's Movie of the Week.
Yeah. Yeah. How about this? The sequel to The Birds.
What?
The Birds 2, Land's End.
Are they making backpacks?
It was made for TV. 1994, The Birds 2, Land's End was made for TV, an error in judgment that essentially regurgitates the plot of the first film with a little bit of Jaws thrown in by way of a mayor who somehow is able to deny that birds are attacking people.
Well, we all know that the true sequel to The Birds is Birdemic.
Birdemic, yeah. Unbelievable.
I think I've got that on Blu-ray.
Why?
Why not?
Tippi Hedren, the star of the classic original, does make an appearance as a completely different character in Land's End, The Birds 2. Jeez. Yeah. But by the way, one of my favorite political posts on Facebook was during the midterms in November. Somebody posted on their Facebook page that in Jaws 2... In Jaws 2, Murray Hamilton is still the mayor, so get out there and vote.
It's true. This is the process.
By the way, his anchor jacket is just his jacket with the anchors. Fantastic.
I'll be honest. I've been looking for that jacket for years.
Oh, man, oh, man.
If I could find that jacket, that's a purchase right away.
Roadhouse 2. I know this one exists. Roadhouse 2 is a 2006 direct-to-video sequel. It begins by informing us that Dalton was killed many years ago by Wild Bill, Jake Busey. And now Dalton's son, Jonathan Scheck, must seek revenge. Since we know from the previous film that Dalton cannot be killed, let alone by Jake Busey, we immediately know this sequel is nonsense. You cannot kill Dalton. Oh, God, I remember this. Dirty Dancing, Havana Nights. Oh, man.
Yeah, I never saw it because I don't really care for Dirty Dancing in the first place.
No, come on. I love Dirty Dancing.
It just doesn't speak to me, man.
Oh, I love that movie. But yeah, Havana Nights was terrible.
What was it, a sequel or a prequel? Or what was, do you remember what the deal was?
It's a prequel to the original.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and it's about it happens in Cuba. Takes place in Cuba during the Cuban, right on the eve of the Cuban Revolution. It's got zero dancing in it, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. Dirty Dancing does not have dancing in it? Does not Havana Nights?
Very, very little dancing.
What does it have? A long monologue from Che Guevara?
It is actually about the Cuban Revolution more than anything else. So.
And nobody's dancing.
Uh-uh. 2010, again, we mentioned that. I like 2010. One, Roy Scheider's in it. Mm-hmm. So that's it. Caddyshack 2 is now... the original cast member Bill Murray was uninterested in returning and wound up suing the production for reusing the gopher design from the original film, which Murray had helped create. Chevy Chase did return. Of course he did. Screenwriter and director Harold Ramis tried unsuccessfully to get his name removed from the project after star Rodney Dangerfield walked out of the movie. Oh, look at that. Rodney Dangerfield. I'm leaving. I'm out of here.
You had to go back to selling aluminum siding.
Yeah. The fact that virtually every key player from the original film tried to distance themselves from this sequel, like a tanker truck explosion, should explain why you probably had no idea it even existed. No, I knew it existed. I've seen it. Oh, here's one of the worst movies ever made in the history of anything. Blues Brothers 2000. One of the worst movies I've ever seen in my entire life. Except... the musical performances. When they get to the House of Blues in the last 40 minutes, musical performances are great.
Because that's Aykroyd, John Goodman.
And a kid.
Yeah.
And a cute kid.
See, that's the cardinal sin.
No, it's unwatchable until the music, until the live performances. Because the live performances are great. They got incredible musicians from Erykah Badu. I mean, major
Erykah
stars.
Erykah Badu?
Absolutely. Mm. And she kills in it. And so the last 40 minutes... It's great, and the rest of it's terrible. I will say this, though. I saw this movie with my friend Scott Oaken, and I will say this. I laughed at a scene. Have you seen it?
Not in a very long time.
Okay, there's a scene in the movie where they're being pursued by cops, of course, and by, again, a country and western band. I mean, it's just a complete regurgitation of the original Blues Brothers. So there's a scene where they're in a diner, and they have to, like, try to get... because there's a bunch of, like, state troopers in the diner. So Dan Aykroyd's trying to get out of the diner without being seen. So... I don't know if people remember this. This is the only thing that I remember about the movie, and I actually laughed at it. It's completely absurd, unbelievably stupid, and I should not have laughed at it, but I did. I laughed really hard. So in order to get out of the diner without being caught by the troopers, Dan Aykroyd goes into the bathroom with a can of shaving cream. And he puts shaving cream all over his head. And his face, and covers his entire head, so he looks like a snowman. But he puts the hat back on and the sunglasses. So there's this big, giant round head of shaving cream with sunglasses and the hat on, and he runs out going, "Oh!" through the diner, goes to his car, and drives away. And I laughed my ass off. And I mean, it makes no sense whatsoever. It's the stupidest thing I've ever seen. But just the sight of this big ball of shaving cream with the sunglasses on it and the hat and just going, "Oh!" and running around. But that's par for the course for that movie. A terrible movie. But I laughed at that stupidity.
Shocking stuff.
I truly did. Oh, it was so terrible. Anybody seen Blues Brothers 2000? My God. All right, we'll take a quick break here and we'll come back. If you guys want to join us, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio on Wild Card Wednesday. You've been Wild Card Wednesday. Who requested that?
It's coming to us from the 414.
Okay. All right. Hey, so we're talking about sequels that you probably didn't know existed that probably shouldn't exist. How about another 9.5 weeks? 9.5 weeks, which is a terrible movie, by the way. 9.5 weeks is an erotic 80s drama that essentially wrote the book on movies you rent when your parents aren't home and you learn where babies come from. The film stars a pre-hamburger face man. Mickey Rourke. As an abusive lizard who has a brief but blazing affair with Kim Basinger, only to have her finally dump him in the end because of the whole abusive lizard thing.
Abusive lizard.
Hamburger face. They're really not being kind to Mickey Rourke here.
I mean, that's out there with, what was it?
Oh.
McGregor, something clown, like...
24-hour clown?
Yeah, 24-hour clown show.
Yeah, 24-hour clown show, yeah. Basinger did not return for another 9.5 weeks, because why on earth would she? The film follows Rourke's character John once again on the prowl for vulnerable women. The movie was originally released as Love in Paris before it was changed to a much more obviously sequel-y title to Another 9.5 Weeks. Basic Instinct 2, I remember when this came out. 1992 erotic thriller Basic Instinct was one of the biggest hits of that year. It became a cultural phenomenon. It was parodied in every comedy movie and TV show of the early 90s, and it launched the career of star Sharon Stone. And they wanted to capitalize on the film's success, so they made a sequel 14 years later. 2006's Basic Instinct 2 saw Stone reprise her role as Catherine Trammell, but absolutely no one was interested. The film opened to lackluster reviews and dismal box office and is forever doomed to the stack of questions that you will forever get wrong on trivia night. Yeah, I remember when that movie came out. How about this one, The Two Jakes?
Oh, my God.
Nobody to blame but Nicholson, man. And Robert Towne wrote it. Nicholson directed it. 1974 classic noir thriller Chinatown introduced the world to private investigator Jake Gittes. Jake is hired to take photographs of philandering husband and quickly becomes entangled in a sinister conspiracy. Screenwriter Robert Towne actually intended for Chinatown to be the first film of a trilogy about Jake. He and Nicholson teamed up to make the 1990 sequel The Two Jakes, when Nicholson also directed. However, as you may have guessed in its inclusion on this list, nobody seemed to care about the continuing adventures. So a third movie never happened. Yeah, I remember being massively disappointed by The Two Jakes. I mean, obviously, it's very, very tough to try and do a sequel to Chinatown. I mean, which is like a perfect movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you see Robert Towne's name, you see Jack Nicholson's in it, and he's directing it. In Harvey Keitel. I mean, it had a great cast, but not a good movie. Here's Paula on WGN. Hi, Paula.
Oh, hi. Well, I hope everybody enjoyed the great Howard Hawks Gentlemen Prefer Blondes movie back in the 50s with Marilyn Monroe and Jane Russell. That was great.
Yeah.
But it was popular enough that Gene Crane took Marilyn's place with Jane Russell, along with Scott Brady, Rudy Valley, and Alan Young. And they went off to Paris in Gentlemen Marry Brunettes. And this was the most bizarre musical you can imagine. Mm. There's no way to completely describe it. But at one point, they actually have a musical number with cannibals, which would play beautifully today, I'm sure.
Jeez. Yeah.
I mean, you got to come across that somewhere.
We'll have to look for it. Gentlemen Marry Brunettes. That sounds like a humdinger right there. All right, Paula, thanks.
It's weird. Good night.
Okay, take care. They include more American Graffiti here in the article. Before creating the billion-dollar universe of space wizards that would eventually guarantee Disney's iron-gloved control of all entertainment, George Lucas wrote and directed American Graffiti. By the way, one of my dad's favorite movies of all time.
It's a great flick.
It's one of my dad's favorite movies of all time because, like, that's the era where he, you know, that's where his favorite music was. His favorite cars are from that era, and that's all that movie is. I mean, it's wonderful characters, you know, capturing.
Sure, yeah.
You know, that's one of the reasons my dad reacted to American Graffiti the way I reacted to Dazed, because it's basically the same thing. You know, when Dazed and Confused takes place at a time when I was 12 years old. So Mitch Kramer is a character that I can really identify with. He's a little old. He's a couple of years older than me than I was at that time. But that's how I felt watching Dazed. I know exactly how my dad felt when we first saw American Graffiti, because my dad lost his mind, bought the soundtrack immediately. Graffiti was Lucas's first huge success, so naturally everyone involved thought a sequel would be a good idea. More American Graffiti was released in 1979, 6 years after the original. And even though most of the cast returned, even Harrison Ford in a brief but equally hilarious cameo, audiences were apparently uninterested in learning about what the characters got up to during the Vietnam War. I didn't think it was as bad. I really didn't think it was as bad as so many people say. I think there's some really good stuff in that movie. So, and I just, you know, the structure was very weird. The structure played with it very Tarantino-esque. The structure of More American Graffiti, because the things are happening. Around. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. How about this one? Christmas Vacation 2, Cousin Eddie's Island Adventure. The title alone right there should be like, yeah, I'm not going to watch that.
Yeah.
Christmas Vacation 2, Cousin Eddie's Island Adventure. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation is a sequel itself, the third in the Vacation series, starring Chevy Chase and Beverly D'Angelo as the perpetually unlucky Clark and Helen Griswold. Christmas Vacation sees Clark once again using a holiday to lead his family into ruin, this time rubbing his accident-prone stain on Christmas. Christmas Vacation 2, Cousin Eddie's Island Adventure, is an enigma. Oh, it is? That's what it is? It's an enigma? It's not a Vacation sequel per se, but rather a spin-off focusing on Cousin Eddie, played by Randy Quaid. Clark's mentally deficient brother-in-law, Eddie, is funny in small doses, but he's essentially just walking. He's a walking redneck joke, so making him the central character of an entire film was a bold choice. It was also a made-for-TV movie, so it's entirely possible that it's only ever been watched by accident.
Randy Quaid scares the hell out of me.
Well, he's nuts. But he's funny in Vacation and in Christmas Vacation. He's hilarious. One of my favorite visual gags in that movie is what he wears on Christmas Eve, like the outfit that he wears on Christmas Eve. It's a white turtleneck. It's a white shirt, a white V-neck over a black dickie, so that you can see the actual outline. You can see the outline of the black dickie underneath his shirt. He's funny in both of those movies.
Well, I'll always remember him in The Last Detail.
Oh, he's great.
I don't know whatever happened to that guy, you know. But
yeah,
I think he's got some.
He was great. He was great.
Serious stuff.
He was great. He was great. All three of those performances in Last Detail.
Mm-hmm.
Hal Ashby, man.
And then of course you got Last Flag Flying.
Yeah, which I loved.
Think a worthy follow up.
I loved it. Thought it was great. Okay, let's take a break here. We got the news coming up right after this. Who the hell requested Milli Vanilli?
I'll give you one guess.
Ike?
Yep.
Come on, Ike. Milli Vanilli?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
I forgot. What did they get?
They lip synced.
They lip synced.
It's not them.
It's not really them.
They had to give their Grammy back. That's the only time in the history of the Grammy. They got Best New Artist. They won Best New Artist. They had to give their Grammys back. And it ended tragically. One of the guys killed himself.
Oh, God.
It's not a happy story. No. At all.
Not Milli and Vanilli.
Well, that's not what they're... they weren't... That's not their names.
Oh, really?
Yes. It's not Milli and Vanilli. That's the name of the group.
Oh, Milli Vanilli.
Right.
Well, there's two of them.
I know, but it's not Milli and Vanilli. They had actual names.
I'd like to see the proof on that.
Just do an internet search. All you got to do is Google Milli Vanilli, and they will give you the guys' names. I can't remember the guys' names. One of them was Rob, I believe.
Rob Milli?
No Milli or Vanilli. You get to get that out of your head right now.
Where did the name come from?
I don't know. I don't know the history of
Milli. I figured it was like Hall and Oates.
No. Well, why isn't there an and?
Stylistic choice.
Milli and Vanilli. I guess I can see the confusion.
Oh, they were from Munich?
Yes. They could barely speak English, and they had an entire album. They released an entire album, and they did not sing any of the songs.
So it's Fab Morvan.
Right.
And Rob Pilatus.
Right. I can't remember which one. One of them killed himself.
No.
But yeah, no, I mean, you go back to 1988, it was the biggest music story of the year. And it was unprecedented.
Yeah, it was Rob Pilatus.
I think he jumped out a window, if I'm not mistaken.
Apparently, it was ruled accidental, but it was suspected alcohol and prescription drug overdose.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, was not a happy. Milli Vanilli was not a happy.
The tragedy of Milli Vanilli.
Milli and Vanilli.
Milli and Vanilli.
It's not Milli and Vanilli.
Agree to disagree.
All right. Now, here they include sequels that should have been made or that you probably never heard of. Son of Kong. How dare you? How dare you include Son of Kong?
Big fan?
I love Son of Kong. The 1933 original King Kong was one of the first special effects blockbusters and remains one of the most famous films ever made. By the way, have you watched the 33 version of King Kong recently?
Not recently, but I've seen it a few times.
Because, man, it holds up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It holds up as good as any big budget adventure movie that they're making now. The original King Kong is unbelievable. I screened it in Rosemont a few years ago.
Oh wow, yeah!
And it was magnificent to see on the big screen. It was a brand new, brand new digital copy. It was unbelievable to watch on the big screen. I've got the whole. My ex bought me this insane giant box set of King Kong, because when the Peter Jackson 1995 version of King Kong came out, I loved it. I went nuts over the Peter Jackson version. I love it. I love it. I back it. I love every frame of it. I'm glad it's over 3 hours long. I adore that movie. I cried I love it. And so for Christmas that year, and it came out at Christmas 2005, it came out. Who was not my wife yet, but my girlfriend at the time, got me this insane Kong box set. So it had Peter Jackson's version. It had the 33, and it had the sequels. It had Godzilla vs. It was like, it did not have the 76 version, which I'm fine about.
Yeah, that's okay.
Just accept that it's an impressive Jeff Bridges beard. That's the only thing I'll say. But I love Song of Kong. I love it. It's a movie about a big beast, man. How can you not? I mean, come on.
A big old beastie.
Yeah. I even like Rampage, for God's sake. They take down the Sears Tower. Did you see Rampage?
I did see Rampage. And I do famously, well, not famously, but I remember Kassara and I sitting in, I can't remember, it was back at Trip Tower. I want to say it was Studio B. Because you were D all the way down the hall on the seventh floor.
Yeah.
So we were in that other studio before where all engineering would hang out. And we just saw the choppers and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And she and I were just like, what is happening?
They destroy the loop in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Which is fun to watch. I mean, I it was fun to watch. They destroy when they brought down the Sears Tower, I was like, that's pretty cool. So, but it's a big ape. How do you not love a big ape busting stuff? That's what I want to see. Using stop-motion models to tell the story of a gigantic raging monkey stomping his way through New York City captured the imagination of audiences everywhere. So a sequel was immediately greenlit, and we mean immediately. Son of Kong was released the same year as the original.
Wow.
Son of Kong burst into theaters a staggering 9 months after King Kong in what might be the quickest attempt to capitalize on a surprise success in history. The film features several new monsters, chief among them the titular Son of Kong, who is less a monster and more a slightly larger than average gorilla. The film failed to light the world on fire for a second time and barely broke even at the box office, possibly because the vastly superior original was presumably still in theaters at the same time. Yeah, but it's gone on to become a classic on TV. I mean, historically, not a good idea to release Son of Kong when
King Kong is still in theaters.
Not a great idea, but that doesn't mean that the movie's not good and not fun, because it is. Oh, what the hell is this? Marley and Me, The Puppy Years? What?
that movie doesn't work if the dog doesn't die at the end. And in case anybody's upset, well, come on. You knew the dog was going to die.
Well, not only that, the movie is like 10 years old.
Yeah.
Even more than that. I remember that that was one of I told you this before. They showed Marley and me on our flight to Ireland.
So horrible. Why would you even do that?
And I've said this before. We're going to the happiest place on the planet. And everybody on the plane is just bawling.
I just... you know, I find that I think it's interesting that there's a subgenre of movies that's just dogsploitation.
Oh, yeah.
Just, yep, dog die.
Yep. We got another one coming out where Kevin Costner provides the voice of a dog, and it's Milo Ventimiglia, or whatever the hell his name is.
Milo Ventimiglia.
Milo Ventimiglia. So he's like a race car driver, and Kevin Costner is the voice of his. It's called Driving in the Rain or something, or how do you learn to drive in the rain?
You know what the dog's name is, of course, since he's a race car driver.
What?
Enzo.
Enzo? Come on.
Enzo Ferrari.
Yeah. But yeah, it's So anyway, Marley and Me, the puppy years. I had no idea that this exists. It was a direct-to-video sequel that focuses entirely on Marley's life as a puppy, as the title suggests, except for some reason, he's not owned by John Grogan, who actually is the newspaper columnist who wrote the story about his dog, but by a little boy named Bodie Grogan. Also, Marley can speak in this one with a person's voice. The talking dog genre... Because we had, like, the dog's village or the dog's journey or the dog's hut. I don't know what the hell. Dennis Quaid running around. There's a talking dog.
Yeah.
and now we've got the Kevin Costner with, Milo Vugadugi's name on? Why am I blanking on his name on Gilmore Girls? Because he was a jerk.
Oh, well, I haven't gotten there yet.
He was a jerk. He dates Rory. I can't believe I'm blanking on his name. Look it up because it's going to make me nuts. I can't believe I'm blanking on his name.
Let's see.
But he dated Rory. And like all the guys that she dates, they're not good for my little Rory. So, yeah. Milo Vugadugi.
Jess.
That's right. Jess.
Jess Mariano.
Jess.
Heir to the Mariano's fortune.
Jackass. He's a jackass. Jess.
The first time I saw him was in... Heroes.
Yeah, well, he would already been Jess at that time. I knew him as Jess, and I hated him. Jess. Oh, God. Mean Girls 2. Have you seen Mean Girls 2?
I did.
Oh, my God.
I want to say that was either straight to DVD.
It was. Made for TV. Mm. I saw it on cable. I love Mean Girls. I love that movie.
It's the perfect teen movie.
And that was back when the Lohan... When I loved her. I loved Lindsay Lohan around that time. And I predicted Oscars.
Yeah.
I loved her. You know, like Prairie Home Companion, she was making good choices. I thought that the Confessions of a Teenage...
Drama Queen.
Like that. I loved her in Parent Trap. I love Freaky Friday. I think she and Jamie Lee Curtis are great in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't explain to you how much I love Mean Girls. I loved Lindsay Lohan at that
Get in,
time.
Loser. We're going shopping.
I loved her. And then she's out drinking with Paris Hilton till 6 o'clock in the morning, screws up her entire life, and the trajectory of her career completely went off. She could have been, I'm not kidding, she could have been like a major force. You don't make a movie with Jane Fonda and not show up. You know what I mean? Georgia Rules. That was another movie that could have been like that
could have
helped her out, but nope. That's really I really think that's like really tragic what she did to herself. No one else to blame. I'm not blaming anybody else but herself. But my God, I mean that right out of the gate she was just, and she killed the first time she hosted SNL. First time she hosted SNL, they did the sketch where they came back from summer to Hogwarts and Hermione had developed.
Yeah.
That's also the legendary episode that features the first Debbie Downer sketch.
It's official. I can't have children.
I can't have children. So, but anyway, Mean Girls 2. Tim Meadows came back, unfortunately. I was like, what the hell are you doing, man?
Paycheck is paycheck, I guess.
Yeah. But nobody else came back from the original. It was like a carbon copy of a carbon copy of a carbon copy of a carbon copy of the original movie. So, yeah, Mean Girls 2, please. All right, let's break here. We got some weather, and then we'll wrap this topic up with more unnecessary sequels or sequels that you didn't know existed. 312-981-7200 for sequel talk and text. And then we are going to talk about some really sort of insane flavored pop and soda from around the world. There's a lot of weird food and a lot of weird drink from around the world, and we're going to prove it. That's coming up. What the hell is this?
It's the theme song to the legendary anime series Dragon Ball Z.
Oh!
Yeah, oh. But it was only for the North American version.
Okay. Was not familiar with that. Who requested that?
That is coming to us from the 630.
All right, 630. There you go. Wildcard Wednesday. You've been Wildcard Wednesday! 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Nick DiGilio here. Coming up, Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on WGN. We're talking about sequels. And sequels that you didn't know existed and sequels that shouldn't exist. And next on the Collider is Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Woo!
Breakin' is that odd film that is only famous because it spawned one of the most infamous sequels in history. The movie about a team of righteous breakdancers who win over a bunch of stuffy dance competition judges. By the way, you know who's in Breakin'?
Oh.
Christopher McDonald.
Yeah, he is.
He's like the agent guy that's on their side.
Yeah.
That's Christopher McDonald.
Oh my God, I haven't seen it in years.
Electric Boogaloo was released just 7 months after the original because apparently the producers felt the world couldn't get enough of these plucky street dancers. The film was a resounding failure, imploding with such totality that the subtitle Electric Boogaloo has become shorthand phrase for a terrible sequel. It's entirely possible you didn't know Electric Boogaloo was an actual film. This movie is so bad that its badness has eclipsed in popularity as some kind of monkey's paw wish. Lucinda Dickey, though, man.
I was going to say, for the low, low price of $15, you can get Breakin' and Breakin' 2 on Blu-ray.
Oh, is that right? On Blu-ray?
Yeah. Those guys at Shout Factory they just go for it. They'll just make a high-definition transfer of anything. And it's
There's
great.
A Blu-ray version available of Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Two times the poppin', two times the lockin'.
Yeah. But Lucinda Dickey, lovely woman,
mm-hmm.
And also starred in Ninja 3, The Domination. Have you ever seen Ninja 3? Oh,
no.
Man, you got us. It's a canon movie, man. Golden Globus.
Oh, my gosh.
Ninja 3, The Domination. It's classic. It also has possession. She gets possessed by a ninja. It's great.
But it's not called Ninja 3, The Possession.
No, it's called Ninja 3, The Domination.
Again, for the low, low price of $15.
On Blu-ray?
On Blu-ray.
Oh, well,
Ninja
that's
3,
a...
The Domination via Shout Factory.
Let me explain something to you for a second here. Me and Eric and Colin, who no longer reviews for us, we now have our good friend Steve Procopi, who, by the way, next week will be live in studio at some point.
Yes, he will.
So that we will talk about Flashback, because he's one of the hosts, like me, at Flashback Convention, which starts on next Friday, a week from Friday. I'm so excited.
I know.
It's going to be great, Tom. You're going to have a great time. You're going to get to meet Sam Raimi, my friend.
Will it be weird if I cry? Because I honestly might. I might get close. I'll hold it together.
Here's the thing. There's like a private party that the people who spent the extra money
get to go to.
They get this special deluxe package or whatever the hell it's called.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to that,
and
that's when you actually hobnob with the celebrities. So you will meet Sam Raimi. You will meet Bruce Campbell. You will meet Robert Englund.
Listen, Sam, I gotta tell you, Spider-Man 3 misunderstood.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm here for Emo Peter.
Yeah. Just don't mention For Love of the Game. That's the only thing I would.
All right, fair enough.
I would recommend not mentioning For Love of the
but
Game.
But we could do Crime Wave. We could talk Crime
Absolutely.
Wave. All right, we're talking Crime Wave.
Yeah, Crime Wave. You can talk about Simple Plan, which is, I think, one of his best movies. The Gift. Come on now, Keanu's in that movie. So anyway, that we'll have Steve in. But anyway, I just want you to know that me and Colin and Eric are the presidents and vice presidents of the Lucinda Dickey fan club.
Is that in writing?
Oh, we love her. We love Lucinda Dickey. And we especially love her in Ninja 3, The Domination.
Now, I have to ask, there must be a Ninja 1 and 2.
Yeah, but those were with Sho Kozuki.
Not Lucinda Dickey. Lucinda Dickey.
They changed it up because she was so popular in the break-in movies. They were like, because they had like very popular at that time. Golden Globus had like your exploitation movies, your stupid low budget horror movies. But their most successful stuff turned out to be those break-in movies and ninja movies. They had very, very in the '80s. The ninja movies were incredibly popular, and so they were like, let's combine the success of our break-in movies, meaning Lucinda Dickey, and our ninja movies, and we'll throw in some Possession. And then thus, Ninja 3, The Domination was born. And there are three big-time fans of it in me, Colin, and Eric.
Why am I not surprised?
Oh.
Why am I not surprised?
Oh, man.
And again, Eric gives me crap for like an
for
Alien versus
for
Predator.
Alien versus Predator, yeah. Well, I think you should get a little crap for like an Alien versus Predator. Those movies are terrible. I like the last Predator movie.
Mm-hmm.
The one with...
But it doesn't star Lucinda Dickey.
It does not, but it stars Olivia Munn. So that's, you know...
It's like Lucinda Dickey.
Oh, I love her. I love Olivia Munn. Remember when she was on... What the hell was the name of that channel?
What, G4?
Yeah, she was on
that's
G4.
How I got introduced to her.
Oh, that's how I did too.
Yeah, she was a co-host of Attack of the Show.
Absolutely.
I used to watch it every single day.
I did too. I watched it too.
Her and Kevin Pereira.
Yep.
Wow, God, what is he
How about this show? You remember Web Soup?
Yeah.
With Chris Hardwick.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I loved Web Soup.
That's a very...
Things You Cannot Unsee. You remember that?
Oh, my God.
And then the palate cleanser. The palate cleanser would always be like puppies or something.
Yeah.
Loved it.
That was a great show. It was a great program.
I'm a big Hardwick fan, man. Always have been. I'm not kidding. Ever since the Singled Out.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. I've liked him that long.
I still think the best thing he ever did was At Midnight.
I agree.
I think that was pretty much the peak of his powers.
I absolutely, totally agree. I watched it every single night. I loved At Midnight.
And his comedy troupe.
Yeah.
Hard and Firm.
Exactly. So, all right. So there you go. There's some sequels. And if you want to see a really good sequel, Ninja 3, The Domination, with Lucinda Dickey, the finest actor of our generation. All right, let's take a break. We got the news coming up, and then we're going to go and talk about weird food and weird flavored pop and all kinds of cool stuff right here on 720 WGN. Standing. Oh, who requested the Tom Tom Club?
It was listener Tom.
Oh!
Tom with the Tom Tom Club.
Tom Club with the Tom Tom Club. Played by Tom.
We're on different levels here.
We're going into Inception world here. Welcome back, everybody. Wildcard Wednesday. You're my Wildcard Wednesday. It's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. And the great Steve Cochran at 6 has your morning drive, as he does every weekday morning starting at 6. Hi. Our phone number and text number is 312-981-7200. What's the weirdest flavored drink you've ever had? And we've got some of the most outrageous pop flavors, or as they say, soda, but we say pop here in Chicago, which is the correct term. But there's some crazy food and drink that you can get around the world. Now, Vic, you've spent some time in other places in the world. Have you had strange flavored drinks of any kind?
Mm.
And I know you've had some weird food. We've talked a little bit about that.
I think the strangest drinks I've ever tried were right here in the good old USA.
Oh, is that right?
I made the mistake of buying, you know those, I think I picked it up at a gas station, but It was one of those flavored alcohol drinks.
Oh.
The most disgusting thing.
You mean like this, like those Smirnoff things with the...
No, that
was...
Was
it Four Loko?
Yeah, one of those, Tom.
Oh,
yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah. It was a gift.
No, that stuff is... You can't, man.
Are you trying to get white girl wasted? I mean, what is...
That's terrible. Yeah, that's terrible.
That's about the worst I've ever...
As Charles Barkley would say, that's terrible.
That's terrible.
That's terrible. Yeah. Well, anyway, there's some weird flavored stuff around the world there, Vic. How about this? Would anybody try Grandpa Joe's Dill Pickle Soda? I'll tell you what, I would.
Yeah?
Absolutely.
Wait, that's from overseas called Grandpa Joe's?
You can get it in stores in Pennsylvania. I guess they're covering the whole world.
Ah, okay.
So it says, American candy shop Grandpa Joe's says if you relish pickles... Oh, see what they did there? You see what they did? If you relish pickles...
They almost got away with it.
Yeah. Hey, oh, you know what? I forgot about this. Speaking of pickles, some listener, get this, some listener sent me, and I don't know who it was, and oh, God, I totally forgot that they're here, sent me a box of, Flavor Ice, Vic? You know the Flavor Ice? It's in that plastic. You cut the tin. It's like a frozen flavored, like, thing. It's like ice. It's flavored, and it comes in a plastic tube. You cut the end off, and then you squeeze the bottom and the Flavor Ice. You know Flavor Ice,
right?
Okay,
everybody knows Flavor
Tom.
Ice.
You know Flavor Ice.
Yeah.
Okay, a listener, and I don't know who it was, knows that I love pickles. And if you guys want to try it in the break room, right down the hallway here, in the freezer of the break room,
I know where this was going.
We have pickle flavored Flavor Ice. So it's like, it's dill pickle flavored ice. They sent it to me. I don't know who the mm-hmm. listener is. It came unmarked. They sent it to me, and it was not, obviously it wasn't frozen. So I threw it in the freezer. Now I completely forgot it was there until I read this, but it's there. So if you guys want to try it, it's in the bottom freezer in the break room down the hallway here.
Oh, man.
And it's a bunch of, like, they're mini. They're not as long as Flavor Ice. You know how long Flavor Ice is? Like,
sure.
It's like a foot long. This is, you know, about 6 inches. And it, oh, and that's going to show up on the show on Friday,
yeah.
Right there. Mm-hmm. And it's exactly like Flavor Ice. You clip the thing off the end of it, and you squeeze the bottom of it in the Flavor Ice, but it's flavored like dill pickle. Oh, I can't wait. I totally forgot that they were here. I'm now so happy. I'm gonna grab one before I leave.
Yeah, none says a happy, hearty breakfast like a dill pickle Flavor Ice.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, but it's there if you guys want to check it out.
I'd be tempted.
It's in the bottom freezer, Vic, if you're feeling adventurous.
Yeah, I'm not tempted at all to go in on that. Not at all.
Well, anyway, Grandpa Joe's Dill Pickle Soda. The pale green liquid is said to be crisp and refreshing, just like the fermented cucumbers they are. It comes in an old-fashioned glass bottle with a pretty label, and we reckon it would be a great gift for any pickle lover. Get yours at stores in Pennsylvania or Ohio, and it's also available online. So for the pickle lovers out there, you can get Grandpa Joe's Dill Pickle Soda. And I would absolutely try that. There's no question about it. I'm all excited about the pickle Flavor Ice now.
Oh, my God, dude. Listen, I like pickle-flavored things as much as the next guy. I love pickles. I think Deanna even sent in some dill pickle flavored Lay's.
Oh, absolutely.
So good.
They're great.
They're amazing.
They're great.
I buy them like every couple of weeks.
Did you ever try that when we did the Lay's flavors?
Yeah, I did.
We had the dill pickle flavor. It was really good.
Super good.
Yeah.
But I got to draw the line at like cold dill pickle.
No.
Like juice.
Well, wait a minute.
I mean,
where do you keep your dill pickle? You keep
no,
your pickles
I mean,
in
like,
the fridge?
The juice, though. Like,
come
I feel like I'm
going
to be, do you drink the pickle juice?
I have.
It's supposed to be like really nutritious.
It's actually good for you. Yeah.
Right.
The only time I've seen people drink straight pickle juice is as a chaser.
Well, there's that. Yeah.
Oh, and you pour
pickle
juice.
And when you're making Bloody Marys, you pour pickle juice.
Yeah,
in
a little
too.
Pickle juice.
Yeah.
Sure.
But
now, I'm assuming these flavored ice things are not nutritious because they say pickle flavored.
Well, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I haven't. It's pickle. I guess it's pickle flavored. I don't know if it's actual pickle juice that's frozen.
Although that's an interesting prospect.
Yeah. like if it's actual pickle juice that's frozen,
right.
But it doesn't look like it because it's kind of got it. You know, it's kind of got that.
No, I guarantee.
Because you know
it.
That pickle,
if it says
pickle
flavored,
juice,
it is not.
No,
real.
Yeah, exactly. But pickle juice isn't really green. You know what I mean? It's not green. It's got a green hue to it. This is like, if I remember correctly, when I was putting these things in the fridge, they were a little neon green. So I do think they might be just pickle flavored.
Yeah, I thought if you broke them in the middle, they might glow or something.
Here's Doc on WGN. Hey, Doc.
Hey, man.
Hey,
I bet you have provided some of this to help market it. But back in 2004, Jones Soda put out a holiday pack.
Oh, yeah. They do it every year. Doc, they do it every year.
The Thanksgiving dinner.
Absolutely. They do it every year.
Thanksgiving and gravy,
yep.
Mashed potatoes and gravy.
Turkey.
Green bean casserole. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, turkey those are all, it's all pop. It's all, you know, it's all pop. That's
cranberry and fruitcake.
Yeah.
And why it was a five pack, I don't know, because why not throw in, you know, pumpkin pie and whipped cream, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But no, they do that. Jones does that every year. They release the Thanksgiving flavored, you know, so you got turkey flavored soda, you got gravy flavored soda. Yeah, it's
green bean casserole.
Yeah. I actually tried the turkey gravy. I tried the gravy pop and it was disgusting. It was,
and I you know, vaguely remembered it, so I looked it up real quick on my phone. It said that they first released it 2004.
Yeah, no, it's been. I mean, it was kind of a staple. We usually talk about it right around Thanksgiving,
and I see it interesting enough to try it.
Yeah, I can understand that. All right, Doc, thanks, man.
All right, man.
Okay, take care. There you go.
That should be a crime. That should be a felony.
Jones,
something like
well,
that.
You know Jones Soda Company.
I love Jones.
They specialize in a lot of different flavors and weird flavors, and
yeah,
then they're
yeah.
the ones that release the turkey dinner. They release the Thanksgiving dinner flavored pop. I guess the only one that would be acceptable would be cranberry, right? That would be the only
sure.
one.
Sure. That just sounds like the loneliest dinner of all time.
I tried the gravy here on air.
Yeah.
Someone brought in the six, like some of the Jones, and I tried the turkey gravy.
Yeah.
It was disgusting.
Yeah, I would rather just drink gravy.
Oh, please. Yes. Sometimes I do, depending on my mood.
Yeah. Having a particularly tough day.
That's right. You know? I'm just going to go home and drink some gravy.
Pass the boat.
Oh, I feel a little depressed. Going to go home and then drink some gravy on the couch.
Nick DiGiulio brand comfort gravy.
That's right. Oh, boy. I'm going to go home and watch Gilmore Girls and drink some gravy. That's going to be my morning. And watch Jess make out with Rory, and I'll drink gravy. How about Fanta Banana Yogurt Pop?
See, that actually sounds kind of good.
It sounds all right. This fruity yogurt-flavored Fanta is currently only sold in Japan. The brand doesn't sell anything like it anywhere else. It's described as, quote, a tangy yogurt with sweet, mellow banana. The drink is similar to cloudy lemonade in color.
Ooh.
Cloudy lemonade. I don't know about that.
Cloudy.
Cloudy lemonade is not. That was my radio name in college. Yeah, cloudy lemonade.
Sounds like you could drink some water, maybe.
The reviewers say that it's extra fizzy and creamy tasting with a heavy banana scent.
Have you ever had Fanta Limon?
I have not.
Oh, it's next level.
Okay.
They only sell it in, I want to say, I had it in Europe.
Have you ever enjoyed Squirt?
Squirt, yeah.
I love Squirt.
Squirt's great.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break here. We got some weather that we want to get to you, and then we've got some very weird food, very weird drinks, and some extra weird flavored pop that we're talking about. If you've tried anything weird in the pop department and you want to jump in here, 312-981-7200. If you had the Thanksgiving dinner Jones soda kit, what's your thoughts on that? 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. It's Wildcard Wednesday. You mean Wildcard Wednesday? 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio, we're back live in the Allstate Skyline studio here. Tom, who requested Neil Young?
It's coming to us from Mr. B.
Mr. B. All right, Mr. B. All right, have you ever tried some weird food or some weird drink? We're talking specifically about really weird flavored pop, like carbonated weirdness. We were talking about turkey gravy pop, dill pickle, and right now, how about Rocket Fizz grass soda? Ugh. Don't expect outrageous grass-like notes with essence of insects. And dirt, but the candy shop in the USA of Rocket Fizz's novelty grass soda, the label says mowed and bottled in the USA, but online taste testers describe the flavor as sweet and herby like basil or wheatgrass. Oh!
That doesn't sound too bad.
If it's anything tastes like basil, it's good. Hey, by the way, you know, I totally forgot to plug Know Your Onion all morning. We're doing Know Your Onion, and that's coming up after the 4:30 news. Know Your Onion. So that's what you got to do. You got to know your onion. You get some prizes. Well, the deal is that Tom is your host, and he will be reading some news headlines to you, and you have to guess whether they are a real headline or whether they are a headline from The Onion, which is a fake newspaper, satirical comedy newspaper. And the news in the real world is so weird right now that sometimes it's very difficult to tell whether it's a real headline or an Onion headline. So we'll get two separate contestants to call in right after the 4:30 news at 312-981-7200. Tom is your host, and we'll jump into another, you got to know the difference between a real headline and a fake headline in Know Your Onion. You will answer real or onion, and then you'll win some prizes. All right? So that's coming up right after the 4:30 news. Let's see. 608 area code says, pickles are cucumbers soaked in evil. No, they're not. Pickles are lovely. I love all kinds of pickles. 312, Canfield's chocolate fudge drink. Yeah, that was a big, that was a big seller over at the Jewels years ago. I remember putting that stuff on the shelf and going, who the hell is going to drink this? And they also had to make things even tastier, they had the Diet Canfield's chocolate fudge drink.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Dan and Mary say, let's not forget Green River. Well, Green River's classic. How about this one? You should look up, by the way, Tom, you should look up, do a Google image search of this. Mickey Rooney's melon drink. Mickey Rooney had a pop tape that tasted like melons, and he put his face on it with a giant hat. Like, the label is hilarious. It's Mickey Rooney's melon drink. And he looks like a lunatic on the...
Canfield's Mickey Melon?
Yeah, Mickey Melon.
Oh, my God.
You see him?
What the hell?
Yeah. Good old Mickey Rooney.
What a nut.
Oh, he was insane. You know, I have to very quickly tell you this story. There was this play that was here in Chicago, and it played for a bunch of years called Lend Me a Tenor. It was a very popular play. And so they would bring in guest stars to, like, get the box office going again. So, like, John Astin was in it from Adam's Family. John Astin was in it. That would be Sean Astin's, adoptive father. He's not his blood father. He's an adoptive father. But anyway, so they would bring in these stars. I'm trying to remember who else they brought in. Well, they brought in Mickey Rooney to play the part of the guy who runs the thing. And I went to go see it on the first night that Mickey Rooney was in it. Very clear to me that he didn't even read the script. Here's what he did. Because the original entrance for this character, and Lend Me a Tenor is a very funny farce. It's a really funny show. You know, classic farce, fast-talking, door-slamming, enter, exit, that kind of stuff. My favorite kind of thing, actually. So, anyway, in the regular production of the show, the character that Mickey Rooney is playing is like the patriarch. He's the guy they're waiting on this tenor, this legendary tenor to show up and save their company. And there's romance and all kinds of stuff. It's fun. It's a really, really fun play.
Oh, I get the pun now.
Lend Me a Tenor.
Yeah.
Well, you're thinking British. You're thinking money.
Lend Me a Tenor.
No, Tenor. T-N-O-R.
Yeah.
It's a tenor. It's a singer. So anyway, the way it's supposed to go, his entrance, this character's entrance, the character that Mickey Rooney would go on to play, is just knocks on the door. They open the door. They're like, has he arrived yet? And because he's very nervous, but it's just like a regular knock at the door. Okay, so Mickey Rooney, All right, so Mickey Rooney, he's in it. We're all there. All of a sudden, it's supposed to be his entrance, and it's like, he's smashing the door. Like, smashes the door. And you can see the actors are on stage. They're like, oh, God. Because they've been probably putting up with this crap in rehearsal and had to make do because he's Mickey Rooney. And so they try to open the door. He busts the door open. Mickey Rooney breaks the door, like, smashes the door open, walks out on stage and goes, how you doing, everybody? I'm Mickey Rooney. Nice to see you. Breaks character completely. Walks into the audience. Walks off the stage into the audience. How are you? Shaking hands. Mickey Rooney. Nice to see you. I've been married 8 times. I don't know if you know that or not, but I'm Mickey Rooney. How's it going, everybody? Meanwhile, the actors are just, you know, completely abandoned on stage, trying to stick to the script. This happens the whole play. Like, his cue lines, other people are clearly saying his cue lines. At one point, like, he pulled his pants down, and he kept making jokes about how many times he's been married, even though that's not what the character is. He broke the fourth wall. If somebody laughed, it's not that funny, he'd point to people. It was one of the most unbelievable things I've ever seen. And now, I'm not going to tell you, I'll tell you the full story off air, Tom. I'm not going to say it on air. I had a friend who was a stage manager on that show. And at one point, the director who had, like, abandoned at this point, because he directed it from the beginning. The show had been running for 3 years. And at that point, it's like, I don't care. I don't care. So Mickey Rooney going off book every night, like screaming, going, hey, how's it going, everybody? I'm Mickey Rooney, you know, and then walking around like at one point he pretended he had a peg leg. It just was insane. Making jokes about how many times he's been divorced, slapping guys across the face for slapstick, you know what I mean? Even though the actors were not prepared to get a slap from Mickey Rooney. So at one point, like, the cast was like, that's it. We can't do this anymore. This is ridiculous. And the director was nowhere to be found. So they elected my friends as the stage manager to go back and tell and give Mickey Rooney a script and tell him you might want to brush up on your dialogue. I'm not going to tell. Let me just say it went very, very poorly.
Oh, my God.
To say the least. And I'm not going to say what he did on the air. I will tell you off the air. But it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And then I went back closing night because Mickey Rooney was the final guest star that they brought in. He was the final guest star because you couldn't follow that. Like, at that point, the show was dead. The houses were down, you know, because Mickey Rooney, you know, because everybody was like, well, it's not the play. You're not going to, if you actually want to see a perfect and good production of Lend Me a Tenor, go elsewhere, because this is not Lend Me a Tenor. This is a mess with Mickey Rooney making a spectacle of himself and embarrassing everybody in the room and everybody on stage. So don't see it. So the box office went down. So I went closing night. I went back to see it again on the very closing night with Mickey Rooney, and it was a circus. Like, first of all, because closing night, sometimes people get loopy on closing night, like, especially if you've run a show for a really long time.
Sure.
And it gets loose, and I remember I went to go see a play from Cusack's company called Accidental Death of a Tourist that Dario Fo wrote, and Cusack's company New Crime did a production of it. At the end, a character came out with a chainsaw and just chopped up the set. You know what I mean? Like, completely destroyed the set. And it was awesome. You know, like, it was closing night. They went nuts. And so on top of that, added to the fact that Mickey Rooney was that night, though, on closing night, the actors went back at him. Like, they would insult him. They made fun of him. They would say stuff like, he would make a joke and he'd give them, that's not funny. So they got their revenge on closing night. But it was insane. Like, when he busted through that door and went, how you doing, everybody? I'm Mickey Rooney. And he walked off stage. I was sitting next to Roy Leonard, by the way. And Roy and I were like, did that really, is that? And he did that every single performance. Mickey Rooney.
I would like a t-shirt that says, hi, everybody.
How you doing? I'm Mickey Rooney. I've been married 8 times. How are you? How's it going? You guys want to try my melon drink? I wish he would have said that. That would have been fantastic.
He comes out with, like, 2-liter bottle.
A 2-liter bottle of the melon drink. How's everybody doing here? Have a free bottle of Mickey Melon.
Have a salty dog.
Oh, my God. Salty dog. All right, Arnie. Well, anyway, that's my Mickey Rooney Lend Me a Tenor story, which is just sort of a legendary theater story. And I will tell you off air what he did when my friend, the stage manager, by the way, who is a woman, I just want to specify that. Anyway, so anyway, Mickey Rooney is a lunatic. That's the lesson learned from that story. All right, the news is coming up, and then we're going to get back to really weird flavored pops right here on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah! Who requested that?
It's coming to us from Squat.
And who was that?
It's Count Basie Swings and Joe Williams Sings.
There you go. All right, welcome back, everybody. Hey, it's time for Know Your Onion, everybody. Get in here now. The phone lines are open. The first two people through, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 will be our two contestants. They'll play separately, and we're playing Know Your Onion. Now, Know Your Onion is when you have to know the difference between a real news headline and a fake news headline. And because the news is so weird, sometimes you can't tell the difference between an onion satirical fake headline and a real news headline. Tom is your host. He will read you some news headlines, and if you know the difference between a real one and an onion, you will win some prizes. It's that simple. So 312-981-7200, and the first two people through will be our two contestants. We'll do one round with one contestant and another round with another contestant. And if you can tell the difference between a real news headline and a fake onion news headline, you are a winner. Nobody goes away empty-handed, by the way. This is a generous game that we play, so no one's going to go away empty-handed. And we've got our first contestant, and we're getting our second contestant ready to go right now. So we do have our first, we have our two contestants for the day. Tom is lining them up right now. So just got to get to know your onion. But you will not walk away empty-handed. So there we go. All right, Tom, you want to do the let's get the fantastic intro going?
It's time to Know Your Onion!
Again, 60,000 people in the studio with us this morning.
It's remarkable.
It's incredible. All right, so Tom is your host. As you know, you got to tell the difference between a real news headline and an onion headline. And so you either say, after the headline is read, think about it, and then either say it's real or it's the onion. And that's how you play the game. All right, here's Steve on WGN. Hey, Steve.
How you doing?
All right, are you familiar with The Onion?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. So you just have to tell the difference between a real news headline or an onion headline. All right, Tom, take it away. Here we go.
All right, Steve, here is your first headline. An award-winning lamb is under investigation for performance-enhancing drugs. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I'm going to go where that's real.
Let's see. Very good, Steve.
That's real?
100% real. A prize lamb is under investigation for using PEDs in order to grow bigger and win competitions.
That's crazy.
I know.
Wow. All right. Nice start, Steve. Very good, buddy.
Thank you.
All right. Let's continue.
All right. Next up, Trump claims he tried to warn the public about Epstein by praising him as a terrific guy. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I would say that's The Onion.
Let's see.
Excellent!
That's definitely
The Onion. Yeah, definitely The Onion.
That's an onion. Without question, that's The Onion. Nice job, Steve. If you get it this one, you bat it out of the park there. You got the majority. You'll get three in a row, and you're going to win.
All right.
All right, good job, man. Let's go to the next one.
All right, let's head on over to sports. The U.S. Soccer Federation argues it's ridiculous for female players to expect the same pay as huge stars on the male team, such as Daniel Lovitz and Jordi Mihailovic. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I would say that's The Onion.
I don't know. Let's see.
Oh, I like that. Yeah,
that is definitely The Onion.
That is hilarious. That is hilarious. Steve, my God, man, you mowed him down.
Look at the speed.
Thanks, man.
Mowed him.
You guys are awesome.
Oh, thanks, buddy. I appreciate that. Listen then, man, you're gonna get some of the best pizza in the world because of that. Nice job, man. Three in a row. Bam, bam, bam. Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is the home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations, or you can order online at loumalnati's.com. Steve,
love that pizza. It's a favorite.
Steve, okay, cool. Steve, you got to hang on for a bit, okay?
No problem.
So hold the line, like Toto. Sorry, that was a...
Wow. Wow. Holy cow, dude. Woof.
All right, let's... Let's get back. Let's get back to the to the game before I make any more Toto references. All right, here's Warren on WGN. Hi, Warren.
Hey, good. What's going on?
How you doing, man?
I'm doing not too bad.
Good. Are you familiar with The Onion?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you got to guess whether it's a real newspaper headline or whether it's The Onion. So, Tom, take it away.
All right, Warren, here's your first headline. Popular clothing brand Forever 21 is under fire for sending diet bars with all online clothing orders. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Let's see, it's The Onion.
Let's see. That is a very real headline, Forever 21.
Seriously?
Yeah, they're getting some flack for this.
Wow, you know, there's a Forever 21 right on the corner on the way in here.
Well, I could use a few diet bars.
It used to be the Virgin Megastore, where I would spend tons of money on DVDs and video and CDs.
If there were a Virgin Megastore still downtown,
it was
blocks from where I work, I would also be spending hundreds.
It's right next to the Marriott at Ohio and Michigan. It's now a Forever 21. That used to be a two-floor Virgin Megastore. And let me tell you something. I can't tell you. You know, it's like, you know, I had to kill time before some of my shifts here downtown. Mm-hmm. Not good. Because I would just go, we were in the Tribune building, I'd just go right across the street and spend a lot of money at Virgin Megastore.
Zing.
Yeah. So now I got to go buy diet bars for everybody. Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, you got one wrong, Steve, or Warren. So let's get back on top. Here we go.
All right. Let's get back here. Here's one. A baking mishap leaves a 2-year-old Missouri girl with a cake saying, "Happy birthday, loser." Is that real or is that The Onion?
I'd say that's real.
Let's find out.
Excellent!
Wait a minute. I have several questions about this. How is it a baking mishap?
I guess a face somehow.
It's a frosting mishap.
Baking mishap? How is it a mishap? Who writes loser on a cake and goes, "I'm sorry, that's a baking mishap"?
My parents.
Wow. All right, you're 1-1, Warren. Nice job.
All right,
let's see what we got next.
All right, let's try this one. Ruth Bader Ginsburg suspended for the next 10 rulings following a Supreme Court bench-clearing brawl. Is that real or is that The Onion?
The Onion.
I don't know. Let's find out.
Very
much.
Of course, I would love to see that, though.
I hear Ruth Bader Ginsburg's got a harsh right hook.
Yeah, well, I mean, have you seen her work out? She works out with weights every day. She's ready to go, man.
Oh, man.
She'll go. All right. Okay, you need one more. If you get one more correct, Warren, you are another winner this morning. Okay, here we go.
Cool.
All right, let's go over to the music world. Famous rock band Kiss has announced that all of their sex songs are about having sex with human women, even though they're dressed up as demons and aliens and a cat. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Onion.
Let's see. Very
nice
good.
Job. Nice comeback. You got the first one wrong, then you got 3 in a row, Warren. Way to play the game.
Yeah.
You know your onion. All right, Warren, you get yourself a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations, or you can order online at loumalnati's.com. Congratulations,
cool,
Warren. You hang on, too, okay, man?
Cool, thanks.
All right, hang on. Steve is hanging on. Warren is hanging on. We'll get all the information and get that great prize to you. And again, next Wednesday morning at 4:30, we will do another version of Know Your Onion, another edition of Know Your Onion. So study up and see if you can tell the difference between the insanity that is the real news and the insanity that is the onion news. Sometimes it's very difficult these days to tell the difference. So. All right, we're going to take a break here for some weather. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show and talk more about these insanely flavored pop drinks here on 720 WGN.
Tim Finnegan lived in Walker Street, a gentleman Irishman, mighty odd. He's seen a brogue so soft and sweet, and the rise in the word, he carried the hut. Tim had a sword.
What is it, March? What's going on here? Is it March 17th? What's happening?
Not quite.
Are we halfway there? No. welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Who is the lass or lad who who requested that.
That's coming to us from Barbara in Norwood Park.
Norwood Park. All right. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on 720 WGN. All right, how about this? Beef drinker teriyaki beef jerky soda.
I just got. Do you have any Tums? I think I just got a little heartburn.
Yeah. Teriyaki beef jerky soda. Hey, where's the beef? It turns out in this extremely potent teriyaki beef jerky soda produced by California-based Real Soda, it comes in a traditional glass bottle, and once the lid is open, a meaty aroma takes over. It's said to taste similar to drinking soy sauce. Why would you do that to yourself? Perhaps if you receive a bottle of this as a gift, you might just want to save it for cooking. That's not a bad idea. That's not a bad idea. Why the hell would anybody want to drink soy sauce? Soy sauce is, I mean, I love it. Adds merit much, man, how much salt has got to be in this? You know what I mean? Because soy sauce is insanely salty.
Yeah. And I feel, I'm always terrible. I use way too much soy sauce.
Oh, so do I, man. No, I go
so,
nuts.
So good.
I go nuts. Whenever I order the takeout and they deliver it.
Yeah.
I use like all the packets that they give me. Although I do have a drawer. I do have a drawer.
I got the drawer
with the soy sauce. With the
spicy
soy sauce.
Mustard.
Yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah.
How about Avery's Beverages with their pumpkin pie soda? Everything is pumpkin flavored. We're getting to that time period.
Sure.
Right around beginning of September, everything is pumpkin flavored and pumpkin spice flavored. Do you love pumpkin pie? This tempting limited edition fall-themed soda from Connecticut-based Avery's Beverages might be for you. The drink is lightly carbonated with vanilla, clove, cinnamon, peach, and butterscotch notes. Experts say that it pairs well with pork roast and mushroom gravy. Okay. Oh, here's one. Grandpa Joe's ketchup soda. Oh, my God. Everybody loves ketchup. But tomato sauce soda? You can find this crazy creation at Pennsylvania and Ohio-based Grandpa Joe's Candy Shop. The producers say the drink, which is bright red, isn't some gross flavor, but a serious craft soda with a unique taste of ketchup. However, the idea still turns the stomachs of customers. Ketchup pop?
I kind of have a tough time with ketchup to begin with.
Yeah.
It's not my favorite.
Yeah, I mean, I'll put it on a burger. I'll have it on a burger.
Yeah,
it's I'll have it with fries every once in a while.
I really like just eating fries plain. If they need the ketchup, you know when it needs the ketchup. But if it's like really good fries, I usually just eat them.
Well, plain. I mean, if it's like gourmet fries, that's you don't
sure,
need the ketchup.
You don't,
but
you
if
don't
you're,
put that
but
on
if you're like if you're eating like you know McDonald's fries, you can use some ketchup on the McDonald's fries.
No ketchup.
So, but. Yeah, but that's about it as far as ketchup goes. Melba's Fixin's Birthday Cake Soda. What's not to love about a sugary, buttery, vanilla-flavored soda? The celebratory drink from the Colorado-based Melba's Fixin's was created to match the exact flavor profile of a birthday cake. Reviewers say that it's spot on, and we love the colorful funfetti label. How about this one? Here's one. Rocky Mountain Soda Company and their prickly pear soup. No. No, no. Prickly pears are actually not pears, but the fruit of a cactus plant. They're sweet and fleshy like honeydew melons and strawberries. Confusingly, the prickly pear bottle label from the Colorado-based Rocky Mountain Soda Company depicts a porcupine. What? But don't worry, no rodents were harmed in the making of this drink. Reviewers struggle to pin down its taste, but they comment that it is refreshing. How about this? Mr. Q, the word Q, the letter Q, and then cumber separately. Mr. Q, cumber, sparkling cucumber soda. This intriguing drink is from Florida-based brand Global Beverages Enterprises. It comes in a delightful 7-ounce bottle that is made with all natural ingredients, sparkling and not too sweet. It's said to be crisp and refreshing, like biting into a cucumber. the ideal drink for a hot summer days or mixing into cocktails.
Well, I do like cucumber water.
Yeah.
It is very refreshing.
It is very refreshing, just like in the other guys. When Steve Coogan give him tickets to Jersey Boys.
I'm not a huge fan of that movie, but Steve Coogan is hysterical.
Well, I mean, Steve Coogan is never not awesome. I mean, that's he's one of my favorite, again, one of my favorite humans on the planet, yeah, is Steve Coogan.
And I don't think comedically he's ever topped Hamlet 2.
I agree with you, man. And you and me and my ex-wife. That's it, man. You, me, and Heather.
He looks at his cat.
It's,
what is your problem?
It
man?
Is unbelievable. He is brilliant in that movie. That movie is hilarious. If you've not seen Hamlet 2, Andrew Fleming directed that movie. And what's her name? Who writes for South Park and co-wrote Bigger, Longer, Uncut.
Yeah.
She wrote it too. It's great. And Coogan is, like I said before, when he's on the roller skates and he's drunk and he goes to the liquor store, that whole thing, and he forgets to wear underwear that movie,
it's a killer.
I love that movie. You're not crazy about the other guys?
I don't love Mark Wahlberg.
Oh!
I love him in Boogie Nights and The Departed.
I think he's great in the other guys. His slow burn is hilarious. Like, I mean, and the pairing of him and the way that Will Ferrell's hilarious. It's my favorite Will Ferrell movie. I like it more than Anchorman. I like it more than any of them. It's my favorite Will Ferrell movie.
Wow.
The other guys.
Oh, man.
I love that movie.
I don't know about that.
Oh.
Don't know about that.
Oh, man. Come on, man.
I think
seriously. Who is that? When Eva Mendes comes in. No, come on. Seriously. Who is that? It's my wife. No. Really? Who is that?
I've never really found Mark Wahlberg to be particularly funny.
I think
he's a very good actor, I don't find him funny.
I just think he's hilarious, and I think, I don't know about any other, I mean, like, I don't like the Daddy's Home movies or any of that stuff. I just think the balance between what Will Ferrell is doing and what Mark Wahlberg is doing in that movie, I think is genius.
I like the Little River Band bit.
It's hilarious.
Throwing a little LRB.
Yeah, it's hilarious. I love when he gives him the FBI, the coffee mug. Female body inspector, and then he just throws it out the window. I just love that stuff, man. Okay, how about this? Mauby Fizz Company and their tree bark soda. This
Come
is the
get your bark.
Yeah, we've got that. We've got turkey and gravy soda. There is curry soda.
I'd try it.
Licorice soda. White fungus bird's nest soda. The Fanta mystery fruit. Meat Maniac Bacon Soda, and then finally Lester's Fixin's Buffalo Wing Soda.
It's good for you.
For the adventurous. Hey, all right, tomorrow on the show we got Triple Play Thursday, of course, and TV Talk with our buddy Dan Feinberg. So Dan Feinberg will talk with us with his biweekly visit. That's going to be on the Thursday show, which comes up at 1 a.m. tomorrow.